So a couple of, well, I guess many years ago now, we were having a birthday party for my daughter when she was quite young. We had a woman over doing face painting, all kinds of cool stuff, and it was just a blast. And kids are like running all over the place. This was at the age when you could just basically hunch up your shoulders, go, and chase children around the house, and they just completely scream and hide. And then occasionally we'll just turn and whack you in the thigh. But that's all right. So the power went out. There was this ice storm. This power went out, and the woman who was doing the face painting was very pregnant. And my wife said, listen, you should go, right? I mean, and she's like, no, I'm here. And so she ended up doing the kids' face painting by the flashlight from a cell phone, and it was quite a blast. And then, it was a very, very memorable party. Disasters make memories. It's just a simple fact. You went through, Andrew, Category 5. You left and never went back. Yeah. You were in South Georgia. Quite sweaty yesterday. I assume that's referring to you, not me. Oh, look. Oh, no, I thought that was more speckles, but it was just something on my face. Because are you in Miami? In Miami? Did you get hit hard? It wasn't that hard, was it? Was it going to be like 10 feet of water or something like that on the West Coast? Oh, yeah, you got hit hard. Somebody says, I always loved rainstorms. We play outside when it was very intense. My daughter and I were once, my whole family were in a tropical storm. My daughter and I went out at 2 a.m. to watch all the trees at 45 degrees. In Scotland, we only get grey weather. Yes, that's true. My kids and I play fight so much, I worry what could happen if they got into a real fight. They could probably mess some other kids up. Ah, but Tim, you know how this works. You know how this works. That if your children are physically competent and not afraid of physical intimidation, they won't get into fights. They won't get into fights. It looked like a nuke was dropped. The Category 5 is deafening, like a train for 4 hours. Really? I remember reading a Dave Barry short story. He's a very funny writer. A Dave Barry short story many years ago. And he was talking about preparing for a hurricane. And he just is incredibly funny. Oh, Dave Barry, I've read a lot of his stuff. Is he dead? God, he was funny. Man, he was funny. He was just hilarious. There were a couple of phrases that I remember. Bill Bryson, also very funny. But Dave Barry was talking about how smoking was, you know, he's a smoker. He was a smoker, I guess, for many years. And he was talking about how, you know, he looks at his wife, he looks at his children, and he realizes how painful it will be for them, you know, watching him get sick and die from cigarettes. And he's just musing over the future and how much he loves his family. And then he says, I got so stressed, I had to have a smoke. Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson is very funny. His travel stories are fairly long-winded, but they are funny. And I just remember something about, just put on the podcast and complain about chores. Oh, yeah, my gosh. Why? If you've got functional hearing, why on earth would chores be bad? Put on a podcast, put on some music, and just power through it. Dave Barry was also once describing things that children are afraid of in the closet, and one of them was Mr. Eyeball Plucker. And I just thought Mr. Eyeball Plucker was just the funniest thing. I literally laughed for like a week whenever I was thinking about that. Okay, kids, go to sleep. I'm pretty sure I've locked Mr. Eyeball Plucker into the cupboard safely. Oh, Mr. Eyeball Plucker. Oh, excellent. Wouldn't that be a great Tinder profile? Of course, that showed up in Baldur's Gate, the new Baldur's Gate. Mrs. Eyeball Plucker. So, yes, good morning, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Nice to drop by for a little bit of a show. I had a sort of random break in the schedule, and I am drawn to you like a moth to the flame of brains. Has anyone ever been to the Coral Castle near Miami? Oh, that's where they sing a lot, isn't that right? Oh! You know, I felt that dad joke coming up, the Coral Castle. And what did I do? Did I stop it like a humane live streamer? Did I stop that? I had the chance to stop it. I felt it coming up. It wasn't involuntary. Felt it coming up. Billy Idol made a song about the guy who made it, I think. what was there an analogy? I can't even remember where I read it. It was like, this floor is grosser than Billy Idol's stained tour bus futon, something like that. Oh, Billy Idol. You know, Billy Idol blew his film career. He was going to be in The Doors, I think, or something like that. And he was just in one of these terrible motorcycle accidents. But talk about a fairly physically perfect specimen when he was younger, man. He was just really physically striking. I saw him in concert, actually. A friend of mine's sister caught the cup that he threw into the audience and kept it treasured for many years. But a real flash in the pan, right? His guitarist, Steve Stevens, man, I saw them doing White Weddings, and Steve Stevens was doing the guitar, and White Wedding is a fantastic song, in my opinion. Just, and, yeah, Dancing With Myself was one of my favorite songs to dance to when I was in my clubbing days. And, yeah, Billy Idol and his guitarist, Steve Stevens, I saw them. It's somewhere on the web where they're just doing, I think it's a White Wedding. And it's just Steve Stevens on the guitar and Billy Idol singing. And Steve Stevens, like, his hands are like this epileptic, coke-stained octopus just flying all over the frets. And I find guitar, I find magic. It's an unholy, sell your soul for Satan, half worth it magic. That's just incredible. Eyes Without a Face. Do you know what they're singing in the background? Eyes Without a Face, God knows you embrace. And they're singing in the background. It's the French version of the phrase, Eyes Without a Face. It was pretty funny. Stefan clubbing, what a mental image. Oh, man. I was a club man. I was a club rat. Playing guitar is more extreme than just hearing it. Yeah, I get piano. I played a little bit of piano. I get violin. I played violin for 10 years. I understand that. I kind of get singing, but guitar is just like weird magic. But of course, I don't have, you look at guitarists and they've got these weird long spider fingers, right? Most of them, right? I know that there's a couple of stubby guitarist guys. I also remember, was it B.B. King when he was playing with U2? They did Love Rescue Me. Was that the song? Love? No, it was... Hey, I was a sailor, I was lost at sea, was under the waves before love rescued me. Great lines. I was a fighter, I could turn on a thread, now I stand accused of the things I've said. When Love Comes to Town, it was a great song with B.B. King. And the guitarist for the U2, The Edge, was chatting away with B.B. King, and he's like, well, you could do this, I mean, you could do that. And he's like, man, I don't do chords. I don't do chords. I do finger picking. I don't do chords. Like, that is a really... It's more about having a good ear than your fingers. No, I've got a good ear. You'd be a power chord guy. Yes, that's right. No, I just find it amazing. There's a fairly mediocre Sting song called It's Probably Me. And it was turned into a work of fair genius with the addition of a saxophone and Eric Clapton on the guitar. Eric Clapton plus any song is just like gold. Eric Clapton plus, Phil Collins on a song, I Wish It Would Rain Down or something like that. Man, you throw in that man's guitar and soul is yanked from the bowels of the earth and spread across the sky like sun-dripped spider webs. It's incredible. Are you aware that in some European countries, children are legally bound to support their aging parents? I know of parents who threatened to sue their son based on this if he were to separate. Yeah, I think Japan, I think, as well. Well, sure. Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course. I Love the Police saw Sting solo and was disappointed. Oof. You know, there are a couple of notes. I mean, don't get me started on music. But there are a couple of singers' notes that just blow my mind. Like the way that singers get particular notes, or the way they phrase and form and power out particular notes. And I wrote about this in The God of Atheists. There's a version of an old blues song that Queen used to do live. The recorded version is fairly fey, to put it mildly, but it's called, She's Gone This Morning. See What a Fool I've Been. In Hammersmith, I think was the place, in 1975, one of the last songs that they did was See What a Fool I've Been live, Queen. And Freddie Mercury powers through this note. My dog ain't too hungry. Just this whole growl. And it's so powerful and it's so bluesy. And I'm like, I remember when I first heard that there was a live version of Mannish Boy by Queen. I was like so excited, but it's actually pretty bad. And so to get back to Sting, there was a Dream of the Blue Turtles tour that they recorded live in Paris that I listened to many years ago. And there was a song by Sting from the movie Brimstone and Treacle, by the guy who wrote The Singing Detective. And in Brimstone and Treacle, there's a song. It's actually quite a pretty song. I Burn for You. Now that I have found you in the cool of your evening smile, the shade of your parasol, and your love flows through me. Though I lie here so still, I burn for you. It's a pretty song. And anyway, live, he's I burn. He just does this note. It just gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. And it's just amazing. Just amazing. So, yeah, I saw Sting a couple of times live. I remember there was this jazz pianist, this black fellow that he toured with, blew my mind. Like, he was playing keyboards with the front hand, and behind him he was playing keyboards with the back, and it was just so funky and so powerful, and it was just, wow. Sting's song, What Could Have Been, is fantastic. Is that right? I will keep a note of it. I don't know that one. It is... Yeah, and it's funny too because I think Sting was a little bit of a sub dad for me. Like, I used to dream sometimes when I was a teenager of sitting with Sting. We had cable knit sweaters, talking about life, philosophy, and history in his old Victorian mansion, and so I used to sort of fantasize about this kind of stuff on Idle Moments when I was a teenager. But I think that the man himself is almost 100% insufferable. Almost 100% insufferable. I remember watching something which kind of blew me sort of any respect, where he was after 9/11, he was, I'm angry, I'm upset. And it's like, not about you. I mean, I think he's a pretty, yeah, it's not the dad I needed. He's a pretty insufferable, half anorexic fellow. But another thing too around gratitude. Okay, who remembers the name of the drummer for the Police? Boy, I've got philosophy, but we'll get there. Who remembers the name of the drummer for the Police? Really a fantastic drummer, like without a doubt. Stuart Copeland, that's right. Shaggy head, lopsided grin, tall, skinny, shorts that would make George Michael of Wham breathe easy. And Stuart Copeland, I actually saw Stuart Copeland give a speech, believe it or not, which was the short film that I made, wrote and produced, was in the Hollywood Film Festival. It was a top 10 finalist, and it was pretty good. Yeah, constantly fighting with Sting. And it wasn't until, yeah, the great drummers, that's just magic. Oh, that's incredible, right? Because they really have to commit. You know, singers can pull back. Singers can pull back, as you find all the time, right? So there's a great song from early Queen called In the Lap of the Gods. And it's really falsetto. Like, it's so easy. It goes really high at the beginning. But, of course, in concerts, a lot of times he would pull back. It's so easy. Just go up a little bit rather than a whole octave or two. And so singers can pull back, guitarists can kind of fudge, but drummers, you can't pull back, man. I remember reading about how the drummer for Queen, when they were on tour, he'd be just like, oh yeah, I wouldn't do anything all day. I'd just sit in the hotel room, vegged out, waiting for the night. Because, you know, the night, we would have the soft numbers where I could rest, but the hard driving numbers, and it was just rough. I mean, it was just, yeah, just all he could do was rest. Because you can't, you know, you've really got to commit and you can't flub it. In my band days, good drummers were like gold dust. You know what the old joke is? What do you call a drummer without a girlfriend? What do you call a drummer without a girlfriend? Homeless. Yes, that's right. You call a drummer without a girlfriend homeless. So, Stuart Copeland, it was only many years later that he realized that he only had a career because Sting is a very gifted songwriter. I mean, I think we can agree on that, you know. He's a very gifted songwriter. And so it wasn't until years later, he's like, you know what? I never actually showed any appreciation for Sting for putting us on the map. And can you imagine, like, Sting carried the band to a large degree, obviously very charismatic, very good looking, great singer, a great front man. And the songwriter, the core songwriter. I mean, if you listen to the songs that Andy Summers and Stuart Copeland contributed to the Police, what do we got? Behind My Camel, which is okay. Actually, a song that I really liked, I change my clothes 10 times before you take me on a date. Before I take you on a date, I get the heebie-jeebies, my panic makes me late. I break into a cold sweat, reaching for the phone. I let it ring twice before I chicken out. Decide you're not at home. Does everyone stare the way I do? I really like that song. It's very, very cute and very, very clever. That was, I think, a Copeland number. What else did they do? Oh, God, the abortive song called Mother on an otherwise fairly perfect album called Synchronicity, where it came from Andy Summers, was just horrible, and I'm sure was one of the main reasons they ended up breaking up. Fields of Gold is a pretty song. And Stuart Copeland had a whole solo career under the pseudonym Clark Kent, although I think he pronounced it somewhat differently until he had a cease and desist. And I was so into The Police when I was younger, I actually listened to some of Stuart Copeland's songs. Oh my God, they're terrible. I mean, they're just awful. I want to be rich. I don't want to live in a ditch. Oh my God, they're just awful. They're just terrible. I mean, he ended up having a career doing soundtracks. I think he did soundtracks, Rhythm Nation. He did some soundtracks for movies, which I guess is fine. Oh no, it was just awful. Like, just okay, I can sing along with them, but I don't want to. You can't sing along with Sting unless you've got your balls in a vice. The Fields of Gold is a pretty song. That album is fairly solid. I actually listened to it not too long ago, and although I misheard song lyrics. Have you ever heard misheard song lyrics? There's a whole genre of like misheard song lyrics. So the song lyric in Fields of Gold, I thought it was, I never made promises lightly. An Arabian summer lies broken. An Arabian summer lies broken. I thought that was a pretty good lyric, except when I read it, it's like, it's not an Arabian summer lies broken. It's I never made promises lightly. And there have been some that I've broken. So, okay, well, I prefer an Arabian summer lies broken, but what the heck? Play that funky music is the most misheard lyric. No, that's excuse me while I kiss the sky. Kiss the sky? Anyway. There's an old Paul Young song. When he was younger, Paul Young had a glorious voice. So he's completely wrecked it now, I think. But Paul Young, every time you go away, you take a piece of me with you. I had a girlfriend once who was convinced that the lyrics were, every time you go away, you take a piece of meat with you. I'm like, what does that mean? What could that possibly mean? Unless she's talking about his penis. You take a piece of meat with you as a man. What do you think of The Who? Ah, fantastic band. Fantastic band. Talk about your muscle, bone, gristle, meat and potatoes. Fundamental R&B band. Just incredible. I mean, the lineup was incredible of The Who. And they didn't actually care that much for the singer for quite some time until he finally got his groove around the time of doing Pinball Wizard. But The Who was, it was fantastic. Pete Townsend, incredibly gifted songwriter. John Entwistle, I think it was, on bass. I mean, that man plays bass he's having some sort of musical God-given epileptic attack. I mean, it's just incredible. And the drummer, of course, before he drank himself to death in that tragic situation. Keith Moon was amazing. And just an incredible band. Out here in the fields, I fight for my meals. Like, the blues singer stuff is incredible. The range he had was incredible. Love, rain, or me. An incredible band. And Pete Townsend's solo stuff was pretty good as well. Listen to Face to Face. I used to listen to that when working out because, man, that can help you power through some sets. That song he did solo off the White City album was amazing.
Don't cry, don't raise your eyes, it's only teenage wasteland.
I remember thinking about those lyrics while I was doing dishes in Africa as a teenager. And I was like, yeah, teenage wasteland, that describes pretty much all of that, right? Keith Moon had a reputation for a destroyer of hotel rooms. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you like Oasis? I got into them when I was young. So the only Oasis song that I really get to was Don't Look Back in Anger. Slip inside the eye of your mind. Don't you know you might find another place to play? Something like that. That is really, really great. Really great song. 5:15 is a great song by The Who. Oh, gosh. What I Love Rain Over Me is great, of course. Won't Get Fooled Again. Fantastic lyrics and a great hypnotic. Magic Bus, I absolutely love. There's a live version of Magic Bus at Leeds. It's just fantastic. So they are a very powerful and positive band. I really hated Tommy. Like, I hated Tommy. So do you know the song? And I've never liked the song Pinball Wizard. And actually, Pinball Wizard, do you know why Pinball Wizard was put into the musical? I found the musical Tommy completely incomprehensible. I remember watching it with my brother late night on TV, and I was like, why are they turning on him? Why are they turning on him? Why is the crowd turning on Tommy? And he said, well, why did people turn on Jesus? And it was like, well, that's kind of clever, but it doesn't really answer anything. But I just found it completely retarded and incomprehensible. And so do you know why the song Pinball Wizard is in there? It's really kind of sad. It's got nothing to do with lyrics, nothing to do with theme or anything like that. So I guess Pete Townsend had written the musical Tommy, but he needed a song that was going to be a real hit. And so he had a great melody, but he put in the pinball thing because he knew that one of the reviewers for one of the major music critics in England at the time was a huge fan of pinball. So he threw in the pinball thing because he wanted to appeal to the reviewer. That's the only reason that there's any pinball thing in there. Dave Matthews, did they do Everything is Automatic? That's a great song. Yeah, why would a blind kid be good at pinball? It's just crazy. A massive fan of the Sex Pistols? I was never keen on them. Although I do remember wanting to do New York, New York at karaoke once. And I put the request in, and I was going to do, you know, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray. I was going to do the Frank Sinatra version, but they queued up the Sex Pistols version, so I did a slightly different version. But the Sex Pistols were a psyop against the West, right? And they were just a psyop against the West. And there's a sort of apocryphal story of the Sex Pistols recording next to Queen. When the Queen were working on A Night at the Opera, which has, of course, Bohemian Rhapsody. And Johnny Rotten came in and said, Oh, you're bringing ballet to the masses, Freddie. It's like, oh, we're doing our very best, Mr. Ferocious. Johnny Rotten, yeah, Sid Vicious, of course, died many years ago, but Johnny Rotten is still alive. And he's, you know, pushing back against woke culture. But no, they were a complete psyop against the West as a whole. But the music industry is engineered largely for social destruction, right? That's what the music industry is largely engineered for social destruction. It's not an organic thing at all. And if it was, they advocated for anarchy in the UK. Yeah, well, that's not... I'm in the industry and I can confirm. Yeah, who is chosen? I mean, of course, there's money-making involved in it, but money-making is subordinate. Because the music industry runs to some degree on Say's Law, which is that supply creates its own demand. So it wasn't like there was this massive demand for degenerate music. But what the music industry as a whole does, particularly to female artists, what the music industry does, I did a lot of research on the music industry writing my novel, The God of Atheists, which you should really get at freedomain.com/books. It's totally free. The audiobook's great. But... So what the music industry does is they find, a lot of times, they will find a young, talented woman. They will isolate her. They will abuse the living hell out of her. And they will release then her tortured soul on the planet to spread trauma. Alanis Morissette. I mean, to some degree, of course, Marilyn Monroe, though she was primarily an actress. Britney Spears. Right, yeah, so they take Billie Eilish. Yeah, they take a woman who's traumatized, and then they will... I don't know about Billie Eilish, but they will generally... isolate and traumatize her further, and the you know oh I mean if I mean no Ellen Page is not a singer but an actress, but she was I think serially sexually abused in her teens by people in the movie industry. So yeah, it's just it's a way of spreading trauma. Don't even write their own songs, but the teens don't know this. Well, they don't care in particular, right? But yeah, I think Britney Spears wasn't she isolated for like a year before they found Baby One More Time? And I assume that they're just preyed upon unbelievably. They're just preyed upon unbelievably. Billie Eilish has admitted that she was addicted to sexually violent pornography for many years. And so that's the portal through which the demons get through, I suppose, so to speak. I like electronic music, don't know why. I would imagine because electronic music in general is very cerebral. And I would assume that, like I had this, maybe it's because I had this call-in show yesterday with one of the most emotionally inaccessible listeners I've ever talked with. I'm sure he'll be fine in the long run, but I assume because sort of the depth of power that is in more meaty music, maybe you like to keep things cerebral, and I think the electronic music generally is quite cerebral. I was quite a fan of a sort of contemporary classical slash contemporary musician composer called Mike Batt, M-I-K-E-B-A-T-T. Sorry, you don't need to spell Mike, but B-A-T-T. The album Tarot Suite, T-A-R-O-T-S-U-I-T-E. That was fantastic. And I quite got into that sort of contemporary classical for quite some time, and Middle Eastern music. Natasha Atlas, oh my gosh. Listen to the beginning of Miss Tanik, and the sort of Arabic yearning in her voice is just incredibly powerful. And, well, I guess you can listen to Mustafa by Queen as well to get some good Arabic chants. All right, music or other topics? I mean, you can do music all day, so. What's your pleasure? If you have more musical questions or comments, I'm obviously happy to chat music as long as the day lasts and into the night. But I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Did you look into the Audio-Technica headphones and the Mika Origin DAC I suggested? I didn't know good sound until I actually had good headphones. I'm now an audiophile. Well, I'm afraid that one of my ears got a little fried by the radiation treatments. So I have some nice headphones, but I got FM and AM, unfortunately. So I'm not sure that I can get as much value out of those headphones as I could. So it was radiation, not the chemo. I mean, one of the others, right? What do you mean by cerebral? Can you please explain this? Expand on this a little bit more. So cerebral is when you have a layer of defense between stimuli and emotion called analysis. So stimuli comes in, you have to stop it like a border guard, check its paperwork before you allow it to pass. So there's a defense against stimulus response called intellectualism or analysis or evaluation and so on. And that's when stimuli doesn't connect directly to your deeper self, to your, you could say, your mammal self or your essential self or your lizard brain. So stimuli comes in, but it has to be routed through the intellect for evaluation and analysis before it impacts upon your emotions. And that comes from, of course, a traumatic environment as a child, wherein you are manipulated or controlled. You're attempted to be programmed, right? So people are trying to program you into having negative emotional stimuli, and your only survival mechanism is to intercept their statements, to analyze them, to review them before potentially letting them pass. Does that make sense? I want to just make sure if that makes sense. It takes me like four times to listen to a song before I feel it, so it makes sense. I find a lot of electronic music goes straight to my emotions in a similar way rock did. Huh? Could be. Fascinating. I wondered why I love synthwave so much. Right, so the trauma of the 60s and 70s led to the technopop of the 80s, right? So the technopop of the 80s is airy, it's emotionally distant, it's heavily synthesizer, it doesn't have deep emotional lyrics. I mean, there were a few. Where is this love that will open the door, right? So, but for the most part, it was a sort of Howard Jones abstract, poppy, fluffy, candy floss nonsense, right? Walk like an Egyptian, right? So the trauma of the 60s and 70s led to the synth pop of the 80s. The disassociation of the synth pop of the 80s led to the depression, alienation, dissociation, and anxiety of the grunge of the 90s, right? Does that, again, just sort of make sense? These are large, and lots of exceptions to these kinds of things, but that's what... and then that led to the straight, shrieky awfulness and pain, like raw pain of the 2000s. And so on, right? Alanis Morissette, I know she was a little bit earlier than that, but that's the general. So there's these general sort of waves, right? Does that make sense? Let me just get your. That's why I didn't go with COVID. Yeah. I mean, I think I wrote about this. I just recently released a snippet from my autobiography that I worked on some years ago, and I released that at freedomain.locals.com. You can read the first bit, and you can subscribe for more. And I wrote about this. I was in the middle of the night when I was very young. My mother was screaming, "I hate these effing kids!" And I didn't let that. I had to intercept everything my mother was saying, because she was mad, crazy, immoral, right? So when my mother would say stuff, I couldn't take it seriously. I had to put a very, very firm barrier between the language and me. Because if I let my mother's language define me, I would go mental. Like, it's an elemental self-defense mechanism to intercept and stop how people are using language to try and define you if they have malevolent or malicious intent. You have to stop. You have to stop. And it's one of the reasons why I was able to take on challenging topics or volatile topics or essential topics in this show was I have, well over half a century of intercepting negative speech, evaluating it, and discarding it if it's malicious, right? So this is why I can survive sort of this verbal lies about me, right? Let me see here. Yeah, so it's a survival mechanism that you can't accept what people are saying about you. Because if you accept what people are saying about you, if you have verbally abusive parents, if you accept what people are saying about you, you will die. Like, you will cease to survive. All right, so let me see here. What do we got here? I liked grunge, but it was just brutal looking back. So grunge, in my view, grunge was an op, in a sense, and the central purpose of grunge was to make women unattractive. To make women unattractive. That was the major purpose. And, I mean, a friend of mine was saying just the other day how, like, in the 90s, like, women ceased to work on being attractive. And just, they never really got it back. I mean, I growing up in the 80s, I mean, the girls were gorgeous. I mean, ever see these old videos of, like, high school in the 80s? And, like, the girls were, they just looked fantastic. Combo candy floss and ice cream on a stick. They were just beautiful. And not, like, certainly not tardy or slutty or anything like that, but just, I mean, they were the muse, right? They were the Beatrice to Dante's Inferno. They were what you aimed for, what you looked for, what you worshipped. The girls in the 80s, oh my gosh, they were gorgeous, gorgeous. I was surrounded by beauty. Surrounded by beauty. And then the 90s came along, and the 80s came along, and they tried to turn women into men with these sort of power suits. Like, women had these big shoulders that made them look like linebackers, and they just had power suits, and they were supposed to look like this sort of working girl, Melanie Griffith stuff. And they just took away that feminine beauty. And then they hit the young were too young to wear power suits and so on. So they hit the young girls with grunge and cynicism and depression and anxiety. And of course, this coincided with the spread of psych meds. And yeah, they just erased female beauty from the landscape. So are you for or against makeup? I'm confused. Why are you confused? I don't understand. I don't understand why you're confused. And I don't think that that's true. I think you're actually upset with me for some reason. Thank you, Morgan, for the tip, if you would like to tip. It's the end of the month, and of course, I do my finances monthly, so discuss the 80s as much as you like. So I talked about how beautiful the women were, and you think that the you talked about how beautiful the girls were in the 80s, and your response to that is that you think I say that they're beautiful because of the makeup? Is that what you believe? I don't remember an excess of makeup in my schools in the 80s. I don't remember that. I just remember the girls taking a lot of care on their appearance. And now, the girls were moderate in their appearance. And so now you generally have two types of girls, right? The overweight girls and the gym girls, right? That's what you have. You have the overweight girls and you have the gym girls. There's not, we're in a society of extremes, right? I love seeing candid photos from the 80s. Yes, the women were stunning. Not trashy or flashy, just beautiful. And the girls that I liked the most didn't wear makeup. The girls that I found the most attractive didn't wear makeup. And why would they? They're naturally beautiful, right? They're naturally beautiful. And so I'm not... I don't mind makeup. I mean, I think my daughter's theory, which is that they make girls insecure, the girls apply makeup, the makeup messes up their skin, so they need more creams and foundation and more makeup to cover up the bad skin, which makes their skin worse, and that sort of vicious cycle. Again, this is not something, I don't even wear makeup for this camera. I probably should, but I just won't, right? What does a lot of makeup say about a woman? That she doesn't like how she looks, naturally. So I don't mind a little makeup. I don't care. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. It's fine. But when women wear a lot of makeup, I mean, it seems odd to me. I remember being, I don't know, like 25 years ago or 30 years ago, whatever, being with a friend of mine at a restaurant. And there was this woman who was seriously overweight and in her 50s and no ring on her finger and all of that. And she had this makeup caked on her face. And I was like, I don't understand that. Like, why would you, what do you think that's doing? Do you think that that means that people don't know that you're obese? Do you think that means that people don't know that you're in your 50s? What are you trying to do? And this is just one woman, you can't extrapolate, but my concern, I suppose, is that if a woman has access to makeup to look good, then what else is she not doing, right? It's not the makeup that I care about so much, it's what's missing. So, you know, this is philosophy 101. Don't look for what's there. That's like a magician's trick, right? Don't look for what's there, look for what's missing. Spend 2 hours a day hiding, what, 1 hour a day in therapy or the gym would help. Yeah. Studies show people view women with a lot of makeup as dishonest. Well, it is. There's this famous routine from, I think it's from TikTok, where this woman's talking about makeup, and it was actually voice synced by a lot of women. And one of the lines is, if men find out we can shapeshift, they're going to tell the church. It's kind of true, right? It's kind of true. Don't women mainly compete with beauty because of other women? Steph, I'm in Thailand for the first time in 5 years. I'm going to write a free domain success story. You've helped me so much. I get choked up even typing this message. I'm so grateful for you, as you've had a massive impact on my life. It's all clicking and fitting together now. How wonderful to hear, and massive congratulations. You are in one of the countries I've always, always, always wanted to visit. Always. So maybe we'll see each other there one day if I sort of get on the road again. So when I see makeup, what I see is what's not there. What's not there. I mean, how do you improve your skin? I mean, look, I'm going to be 57 in a couple of weeks, right? I'm going to be 57. I have good skin, right? I have good skin. Pretty tight under the jaw. Still have a jawline. Very few wrinkles, right? I have good skin. Why do I have good skin? Because I exercise, I hydrate, and I use a cream. I use a moisturizer at night because my skin is just very dry as a whole, right? So I guess because I'm Irish, my skin is designed for a damp climate, like you're inside somebody's lung or a tandoori oven with water jugs. So avoid the sun. I'm half and half about the sun. I'm half and half about the sun. How's the truth about the French Revolution going? Oh, man, it's going to blow your mind. It's great. It's great. Well, I shouldn't say it's great because Jared is the guy doing the research, but we'd be talking about it, and that's going to be great. Jennifer Connelly is my eternal crush. She looked best in Dark City and Requiem for a Dream. Right. But you understand the danger of celebrity beauty, right? Do you understand the danger of celebrity beauty? You understand that, right? Celebrity beauty is junk food for the gonads. Invested in good moisturizers lately. No homo. Taking care of your skin is totally fine. I can take a guess. Please explain. So, of course, as you know, junk food hyperstimulates the palate to the point where normal food starts to taste bland, right? It reprograms you to need excessive stimuli for things to taste good. Does that make sense? And repeated exposure to... So celebrity beauty is like one in a million, right? One in a million. And so what happens, of course, is if you bond with celebrity beauty, that is reprogramming your beauty standards to be entirely unrealistic. And therefore, what happens is, just as regular food tastes bland if you're addicted to junk food, regular-looking people look ugly if you're addicted to beauty. You have to limit your intake of physical flawlessness because it reprograms you to find normal people unattractive. Does that make sense? I mean, they are face prostitutes, right? Because they make their money off their looks, right? And there's talent, too, of course. There's talent, right? Celebrity beauty is so segregated that I'm unattracted to its specificity. Of course you are. Of course you are. Yeah, you have to limit consumption of physical flawlessness. Of course, other than watching me, the giant thumb of showiness. But yeah, you have to be careful with this stuff. Like, I mean, people are beautiful for sure. And of course, you understand that this is why there's such schadenfreude with celebrity disasters, right? You understand that people are trying to free themselves of the devilish hypnosis of physical attractiveness. And so whenever a celebrity is revealed to be bad or to fail or the breakup or the divorce, everyone's fascinated because that's the true self trying to struggle out of the addiction to physical beauty. Princess Diana. Well, yeah, I mentioned this a million times on the show, but British women's mental health went up enormously after the death of Diana, because that's the end of the fairy tale, right? Dying like a burnt dog in a Paris tunnel. The Thai person. I understand totally. I think I'm detoxing from the stimulus and Instagram by being busy 100% in my waking moments here in Thailand. I feel alive here. Yes, 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 yes. It's a form of cheekbone prostitution in a sense, right? Like Charlize Theron, she's arguably the world's number one for a while. Now she looks miserable. Oh, she is miserable. She is miserable. I mean, isn't she transitioning her two kids and who were adopted, and she's complaining that no man will date her and men need to step up and take care of the single mother, and it's miserable. You know, the moral horror show of Sandra Bullock is a pretty intense. Do you think most celebrities are actually happy or hiding misery even in their prime? Okay. Would you like to know, where does acting come from? Why are people good at acting? Would you hit me with a why if you'd like that? Why do we even have actors? Why have we developed the skill of acting? Yeah, actors don't come from nowhere, right? Actors don't come from nowhere. I mean, the ability to act, the skill at acting doesn't just arise out of nowhere. I mean, when Elia Kazan was first casting A Streetcar Named Desire and needed someone for Stanley Kowalski, and Marlon Brando showed up at his place, Marlon Brando fixed some plumbing because he was kind of handy and then read the script, and Elia Kazan was like, "You are Stanley Kowalski," and that's it, right? That's it. Weren't actors seen as the bottom of society at one point?
Yeah.
Acting is a form of spiritual prostitution. Pleasing your parents, protection in childhood, escapism. All acting is a rejection of authenticity, right? All acting is a rejection of authenticity because you're pretending to be someone and something and have emotions that you don't. So why would we have developed, why would he have evolved the ability to convincingly mimic emotions? Why would we have even evolved? Why would we have that as a capacity, the ability to convincingly mimic emotions? For survival. Yeah, to satisfy the sadist in her life. Yeah, that's it. So, I mean, Robin Williams' mother was incredibly depressed and he developed the ability to laugh as to make people laugh as a survival mechanism so that his mother didn't die and he wouldn't die. So why does someone develop the ability? And you can read I'm Glad My Mother Is Dead or whatever it is, Jennifer McCurdy's. I read that actually, right? Curious. So why she had a complete monster of a mom, completely abusive on every conceivable level. So why would you develop the ability to cry convincingly? Because you have somebody who's cruel, who wants to make you cry, and if you can fake cry convincingly, then the sadist is satisfied and you can survive. Right? So, emotions that you can summon at will, you've learned to do that ability because you've need to satisfy people who want to bully and control you emotionally, and you need to fake it so that you don't die. You don't get abandoned. And, you know, if you are a, if you're a person, you're going to get beaten until you cry and sob and submit, and you don't, you defy, like there's that fantasy scene in Fight Club, right, where the guy comes in and tries to shut down the Fight Club, and even though Brad Pitt's character is very good at fighting, he lets the guy just beat him up and continues to laugh at him and mock him, and, oh, is that all you got, right? This is all our fantasy, right, about how we deal with violence. It's like, no, you submit to violence is why it works, right, because we are programmed to submit to violence, otherwise we die and our genes don't propagate. So, if someone is going to beat you until you cry and submit and snot runs out of your nose, then you want to mimic that as early as possible so the beatings stop. Does that make sense? Hit me if that makes sense to you. Yeah. If you have a mother or a father who is depressed and so depressed that they can't provide for you, like, I mean, for my mother, as you know, when I was alone with her, after my brother went to England, my mom wouldn't get out of bed. She wouldn't get out of bed. I had to talk with her. I had to plead with her. I had to reason with her. Because if your mother doesn't get out of bed, if your parents are so depressed that they can't provide for you and you're little, what do? You die. You die. I mean, unless you can attach to someone else, right? Which is also risky. Also risky. I mean, throughout our evolution, why would somebody want some other kid to be part of their household? Probably for nefarious reasons, right? So pleading with someone to not die, so I end up dying, pleading with someone to be rational, pleading with someone to overcome their dysfunction. I mean, that's the root of, right, one of the things that I do in the show, right? I'm aware of that. This is not like some big trauma. I'm not repeating the trauma here. But that's where some of the skills develop from. Why am I able to spot inconsistencies? Why am I able to spot hypocrisy? Why am I able to sort of instinctively grasp contradictory views that are meant to manipulate me? I mean, that's not a skill I developed out of funsies. I mean, all essential skills are survival skills. All fundamental talents are survival skills. And this is not to say that the talents are bad, but it's just important to know their origin, right? Isn't it important to know their origin? The scene with Rick Shaw crying and saying, "Wake up, champ," is even sadder now. Yeah. Well, it's like the people who are obsessed with their bodies and kind of narcissistic with the perfect form. What are they making up for, right? Feeling unattractive. And so what does makeup do? Makeup says, ugly. So makeup is, you paint a wall. Why do you paint a wall? Because the wall is unappealing in its natural state. You don't paint over stained glass, right? You don't paint over a beautiful stonework, right? You don't see somebody with a nice stone frontage to the house roller painting it, right? You paint something that is unattractive and unappealing. And this is always the question, how do you become appealing? Do you go from the outside in or the inside out? How do you become appealing? I actually find it kind of funny that there's an actor named Rick Shaw. Does he come with wheels? Yeah, so how do you become attractive? From the outside in or the inside out? How do you become appealing? How do you become of value? The inside out or the outside in? If you go from the inside out, then it will cost you. Yeah, crack jokes, be attractive, be appealing, look cool, look successful, have friends, post on Instagram. Well, that's all outside in. And the more you work from the outside in, what's the shadow cast by that, right? I mean, you look prettier, right? You put the makeup on, you get your filters, you rent the mimic fuselage of a private plane or something like that, and you look more attractive. There's no question of that, right? Again, that's what you see. And, you know, what I'm always reminding everyone is the unseen is what matters. Right? So if a woman has, you know, a perfect physique and the makeup and Instagram pictures, and she, right? So she's clearly has worked for thousands and thousands of hours on her exterior. And you see that, right? But of course, we're not about the seen. Philosophy is about the unseen, the hidden cost, like economics, right? It's not the visible benefits, it's the hidden costs that matter. In economics, it's the same thing with philosophy, moral philosophy, relationship philosophy, and self-knowledge philosophy. What is not there, right? Oh, what is not there? Now, if you, as somebody who works from the outside in, what happens to them over the course of their life? Right? Somebody who works from the outside in, what happens to them over the course of their life? They get excessive joy. When they're younger, they get excessive attention, they get excessive happiness, they get excessive trips and guys and girls or whatever it is, right? So somebody who's working from the outside in to be attractive, what happens to them over the course of their life? We all know this, right? Yeah, they get old. They hit the wall, they get old, they get old. 90% of men lose their hair. And you get older, you get creakier. I mean, I won't share the pictures I've shared before of me as a young man, but I was like very, very handsome, especially with that sort of fluff-haired 80s look, right? I was very handsome. I still really like the way that I look now. I like it. I mean, most people on camera will put on some makeup and all of that. I don't care about that stuff. I'm just not going to waste the time, right? Because I don't have 20 minutes to put on the makeup and then 20 minutes to take it off. I mean, I'd rather work on writing the book or play with my daughter, or like, why on earth would I want to do all this crap, right? So, plus, you know, technology can just figure it out later. So, when you and we all understand this instinctively, right? That if we date someone who, as the old song says, she ain't pretty, she just looks that way, right? Then we are setting ourselves up for the crash of, for women in general, depending on how you count it, the second half, the second 3/5, maybe 2/3 of their life. Depression, anxiety, loneliness, caroning, AWFLs, whatever you want to call it, right? So, yeah. You know what life is. It's always pay me now, pay me later. Excessive joy in just the future. And everybody knows that if you're just working on the outside virtues, or sorry, if you're just working on the outside physical appeal, it comes at the cost of wisdom, inner beauty, and when you lose your looks, you lose your value. And this is another reason. Getting women to focus on their external appearance sets the world up for this depopulation stuff, which I sort of talked about last week in a subscriber show. right? We follow that, right? That if you get women to focus on their external appearance, you inflate hookup culture and destroy marriage. Right? You inflate hookup culture because you're like, excessive beauty is junk food for the gonads or the hormones as a whole, right? Because men want to have sex with women who are physically very attractive, but a lot of times they don't want to marry them. Because marriage is really about the second half of your life. You understand that? Like, marriage is not for the young. Marriage is for middle age and beyond. You follow? Why is marriage for the second half of your life? And it's for women in general for the second half of their life. That's what marriage is designed for. For women, for the second half of their life. What is the value in particular for women for the second half of their life? No, you can have children without marriage. Yeah, because looks go away. A man can continue to have... I could start a family tomorrow, right? Again, I won't, obviously, but I could, right? Physically, I could. So, monogamy is a man saying to a woman, I will stay with you well past your fertility window, even though I could go and start another family and you can't, right? So a woman sacrifices some of her excess value when she's young, and a man sacrifices his excess value when he gets older. So a man, let's say in his 40s, in his 50s, a man usually has proven resource acquisition. He has assets. He still has his fertility. He hasn't aged as much as the woman. He hasn't gone through the menopause stuff, which can be pretty tough for some women. So a man has excess value 40 plus, a woman has excess value from 20 to 40. So the woman trades her excess value from 20 to 40 and says, I'll be monogamous even though I could have other men. I'll be monogamous from 20 to 40. And then the man says, even though I could have other women in another family, I'm going to be monogamous from 40 to 80 or 40 to death or 40 to 90 or whatever, right? Does that make sense? So the woman is trading her excess value when she's young for the man's excess value when he's older. And the excess value for a man when he's older lasts a lot longer than the excess value that women have, right? I mean, was it Al Pacino's just having a kid? Mick Jagger had a kid in his 70s or whatever it was, Anthony Quinn, right? So monogamy is designed to trade the excess value of the 20 years from 20 to 40 for the man's excess value from 40 to 80. Do we hear, right? Do we understand this? This makes sense, right? Hit me with a why if I don't want to over-explain things that are, I'm sure, fairly obvious to everyone, right? I mean, it's usually good to have it explicated in this kind of way, but, right, we're with you, right? So, the man, what is the man scanning for? This is interesting and informative. I'm glad to hear. So what is the man scanning for when he's younger? He's not scanning for immediate physical beauty because that impacts him at a deep sense and sensual level, right? So a man, when he's younger, and he's looking on who to commit, who to become monogamous with, who to marry, he's not scanning for physical attractiveness because that's happening automatically. He's not scanning for fertility markers. They impress upon himself automatically. What is he scanning for? He's scanning for how the woman will handle the loss of her beauty. Sorry to yell at you guys, but this is very... No, he's scanning for how the woman is going to... He's scanning for the last 40 years of his life. From the woman from 40 to 80, how's she going to handle not being hot, not being attractive, not having male attention, not being able to manipulate on beauty, not getting deference, right? That's what the man is scanning for. How's she going to handle the loss of her beauty? Right, because I was just talking about this, I think, last week about I'm going through that phase where women don't check me out, right? I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's natural, right? I mean, the only person I care about checking me out is my wife, right? For someone not crazy, well, yeah, okay. How are you going to handle the loss of your beauty?
Because if a woman can't handle the loss of her beauty, how's the man's last 40 or 50 years of life? Right? It's going to be hell. Like, it's going to be hell. Like, he will pray for death. The most physically attractive woman I know is rounding the corner, and she's not taking it well. She's going crazy. Right. Right. That's tough. Again, sort of end of the month thing. If you're here and you're watching, there are a bunch of people watching. If you could tip, I would really appreciate it. I think this stuff is very handy to keep your life sane and happy. And again, it is the end of the month, so I kind of need to tally up how I did this month. And I like to feel happy. I like to feel like the show is doing well, or at least reasonably well. So if you could tip and help out my mood, I would really, really appreciate that. Do women transfer that obsession to their daughters when they lose their own? Well, the women who don't learn it. But you see, here's the problem. If she puts total emphasis into her exterior, then the man will want to have sex with her, but he won't want to marry her. Because a woman who puts too much focus on her exterior is hollowed herself out inside and will not handle the loss of her beauty. When we get annual subscriptions, does locals pay you monthly or right away? Whatever works for you, it doesn't have to be dropping into the financials absolutely today, but tipping coming, thank you very much, right? Tell me this isn't helpful stuff, right? So true over here, says Taylor. Got married when we were 20. I was pretty and my husband was broke. Now we're in a 30. She's an engineer and I'm not so pretty. Right. So the woman, so Taylor, what do you have to roll the dice with when you marry a man? What's your big rolling the dice when you marry a man? What do you not know that you're going to find out that you have to scan for? What do you roll the dice for when you marry a man? If he's going to provide, yeah. Will he be successful in the marketplace, right? Oh, thank you, Henri. I really appreciate that. Henri, thank you. So is he going to provide? That's the big dice roll. So Taylor, my good friend, how did you know or how did you have a reason to believe that your husband was going to provide? How did you know? How did you know? What do women look for a man's ability to provide? I didn't. I lucked out. I was just trying to get out of my parents' house. Oh, okay. Well, okay. So I'm sure you did look for some things. So for the other women or men here, what do women look for to determine whether a man they commit to and have children with is going to provide? Right? Subscribe, people. This value you can't get anywhere else. That's true. I think the breadth of this discussion is right. Intelligence, drive, motivation. A woman will also look at the man's family. So if the man comes, let's say in the modern context, if the man comes from a wealthy family and his father is an entrepreneur, then he's going to have inbuilt access to a graduate degree in Masters of Business Administration. Because his father is going to have, tell him what to do, how to do it, have contacts, investors, skills, abilities. Like, you know, the fact that Bill Gates, when he was younger, was negotiating with IBM for the license for MS-DOS, and his father was an intellectual patent lawyer. And he was kind of running out of the room, calling his dad, going back in. I mean, when you're in your, I don't know, what was he, 20 or something like that, you don't have $100,000 to drop on lawyers' fees to negotiate contracts. So, but he had his dad. He had his dad. Passion, you once said you don't trust people without passion. Passion's a bit morally neutral, though. Yeah, if his father is a provider, it's a good bet he will be too as well. Right. So if his parents are intelligent, successful, and involved, that means that he has received a steady drip of good advice and good morals, or at least a good work ethic, for 20 years straight. So, or if he, let's say that he grew up poor, but he hates poverty, he's read economics, he's read business, he can talk intelligently about world affairs and so on, right? Taylor says, looking back, he was very driven. I wasn't conscious looking for that, though. Pure lizard brain at that age. Well, that's fine. Yeah, well, lizard brains, I mean, literally lizards will look for the most providing, or at least reproductively fit male, right? So you look for good intelligence,
You look for physical attractiveness matters because physically attractive people do better in the world, both men and women. And physical attractiveness is just another way of saying good genes, right? I really did need to hear this. I've been focused on working out too much. And I understand that, and there's nothing wrong with working out, but you don't want to make that the basis of your value. Because, you know, guess what? What's going to happen to your working out when you have a couple of young kids at home? I mean, it'll still be there and all that, but you're going to be working out a whole lot less. Probably, right? Probably. I love that my wife's parents have the type of marriage I want to have. Yeah, for sure. Does the male lizard brain also work if you're from a dysfunctional background? Well, from a dysfunctional background, your male lizard brain is probably going to point you towards short-term reproductive strategies, which an excess of female beauty focus will attempt to tickle, right? So makeup is it R-selected or K-selected, right? I mean, I'm not talking about a little bit of blush or a little bit of makeup where the woman spends $500 a month on creams and foundation and can't leave the house without putting her face on. Is makeup, that level of makeup, is it R-selected or K-selected? It's R-selected, yeah, for sure, because it's highlighting. You understand that makeup is a porn face, right? You guys know this, right? I mean, I haven't used that phrase before, but we've talked about this before, right? Makeup is porn face, right? Because makeup simulates orgasm. What happens when a woman is sexually attractive? Her lips get red. What happens when a woman is sexually attracted, having an orgasm? Then her cheeks get flushed, right? So makeup is a porn face, right? It literally is like a man walking around with a giant strap-on boner under his gabardines, right? It's pitching a tent all over the place. Oh, R-selected. So R-selected is a reproductive strategy that's followed by prey animals, right? Rabbits and so on, mice. It's just have a whole whack load of babies and just hope that some of them make it to maturity. I guess frogs do the same thing. So when you're a prey animal, you just have a bunch of, you don't invest much into your offspring because there's no point, right? Why is the letter R? Just R versus K. It's just standard. R. You can just think of R for reproductive strategy. Steph, I am embarrassed to ask, why am I so deeply and lustfully attracted to the dark, smoky eyeshadow women wear? Would you like to know the answer to that? Would you like to know? Would everyone like to? I can tell you the answer to that if you want. Yes. So what does dark, smoky eyeshadow indicate? It indicates a lack of sleep. No, not youth. It indicates a lack of sleep. It does two things. One, it indicates a lack of sleep. Number two, it makes the eyes pop. And the eyes popping, the eyes being brighter is a mark of youth. So why would you be interested in a woman who has insomnia? Why would you be attracted to a woman who has insomnia? No, not up with the kids. Not up with the kids, because you wouldn't be attracted to a woman who has kids, because that way you'd be raising somebody else's kids. Yeah, R is reproductive rate, K is carrying capacity. So what's the primary cause of insomnia in the world? What's the primary cause of insomnia in the world? Why do people have insomnia? Child abuse, that's right. That's right. Trauma. So you're attracted to women with the smoky eyeshadow because it indicates insomnia, which is a marker for child abuse. So you're attracted to a woman who's traumatized. Therefore, you would perceive to be not as much of a threat, maybe a little bit easier to control, and that you have the hot, crazy sex matrix going on in your head, like the crazier the woman, the hotter the sex, and so all of that sort of stuff, right? As an insomniac, I'm quite productive as a result since I can't sleep. Maybe you're like hard-working women, LOL. Well, but big dark circles under your eyes? Aubrey Plaza has those eyes. Who the heck is Aubrey Plaza? Let me have a look. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is raccoon eyes, right? Oh, you don't? So you're an insomniac, but you don't have the dark circles under your eyes, right? So a woman who's suffering from insomnia, or a man who's suffering from insomnia, has poorer judgment, is more desperate. And insomnia, you understand, insomnia also produces the challenge of loneliness, because when you're an insomniac, you're up when nobody else is around, you pat around the house silently, nobody else is around, and all of that. So when will we see a Bitcoin roundtable again? I miss those. I think when Bitcoin starts to do something interesting, it's been, you know, fairly flat for the last while. It helped getting through residency, at least. Oh, I'm sure that was the case. Isn't it crazy just how truckers have to sleep every 7 hours or can't drive more than 7 hours, but some doctor can prescribe you life-saving or life-endangering medication on 40 hours no sleep, right? Crazy. Crazy, man. So the woman is looking, the young woman is looking for future markers of productivity, right? The man is looking for whether the woman has inner resources to not make his life hell for the last 40 or 50 years. Oh, thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you so much. So you're looking for a woman who can survive the loss of her beauty, just as you can. A woman is looking for a man who can at least risk the loss of status by reaching for the ring and going for the gold and seizing the carp, right? Now, the woman is programmed to look for the man's ability, future ability to provide resources, which is why women are torn between the two poles of emotional availability and emotional unavailability, right? So a man who is emotionally available, is sensitive and empathetic, will be a good father and a good lover. But the man who is Christian Grey, cold-eyed, sociopathic, will be a great provider, but you'll be isolated. So it'll be good for your genes, bad for your heart. Also, the problem is the sociopathic guy, who's a great provider in a way, when he's young, particularly if he's intelligent and charismatic and good-looking, the sociopathic guy is great, he's R-selected, because he's great for reproductive success when you're young, but he'll just leave you because he has no bond with you. So when he gets older and he can still have kids, he'll just leave you. All right. So, I mean, you look at sort of the 50 Shades of Grey, the Christian Grey story. The guy's a billionaire. He's got abs. He plays piano. He's tortured. He's gorgeous and all that kind of stuff, right? The actor was like Mr. Bod when he was younger. So Jamie Doonan, I think his name is. Fine old Irish fella. So what's going to happen when... I can't remember the girl's name. When she ages out, they have kids, she's pregnant, she ages out, and she's no longer physically attractive. Don Johnson's kid. Well, Dakota Fanning, whatever her name is. So what's going to happen? He's just going to dump her, and he's going to move on to a young, because he's not got no pair bonding. He was sexually abused as a child. He's got no pair bonding. He's a sociopath or whatever, right? So you know what's going to happen. He's just going to dump her. And then she's going to cry misery and sadness, and she's going to take him for his money, right? Because a lot of the family court system is designed so that women can keep milking sociopaths after they get inevitably dumped by sociopaths. Right? They want the sociopath because he's sexy and cold and can get a huge amount of resources, and then the woman can continue to get those resources after the inevitable happens. She gets traded in for a younger model. Right? First wife's club. Is this helpful, useful? Just want to make sure we're talking about things that are of value to you, right? I mean, it's your show, so we can change topics whenever you like. But okay, so the last thing I wanted to say about this, so the woman is scanning for a man who's got a balance between assertiveness and emotional availability. If he's assertive enough to go and make money in the workplace, compete with other men and get stuff, that's good. But if he's cold emotionally or unavailable emotionally, he won't pair bond with her, he won't pair bond with the children, he won't be as good a father, and there's great risk he'll dump her. When he gets older, he'll pursue a second family, and she'll be alone and miserable for the rest of her life. So the man is scanning for how will the woman handle the loss of her fertility. The man doesn't have to worry about losing his fertility, because the man remains fertile. If he's reasonably healthy, he remains fertile into his old age. So the man doesn't go through the phase of losing his fertility. I guess he goes through the phase of losing his hair. At least 90% of men do. But so how is the woman going to handle the loss of her fertility? So if the woman is solely focused on outside-in value, then there's no inside. The woman's inside is what has to carry her for the last half of her life, right? It's the woman's virtue, her kindness, her generosity, her charity, her love, her connection, her hard work, her dedication to her family, all of those, her honesty, her moral courage, all of that. So the woman, if she's working outside in, thus emptying herself out, well, the outside's going to lose, right? So if you focus on the outside and you empty out the inside, then you lose the outside, you've got nothing left on the inside, and you have no value. You have negative value for the second half of your life. Right? You have negative value for the second half of your life because you're neurotic, angry, bitter, resentful, expensive. Often you have ill health. You're going through menopause, which makes you moody. It's just negative value. So you go from having heightened positive value, which is the junk food, to, I don't want to say heightened negative value, but like bottom of the canyon negative value. So you don't want that bipolar swing over the course of the lifetime. So the man who's looking for, this is why I'm saying that a focus on makeup fuels hookup culture and kills marriage, because a focus on makeup and physical attractiveness ends up with guys obsessed with having sex with you, but who never want to commit to you because we instinctively understand that a woman who's solely focused on her beauty is going to go mental when she loses her beauty. My mother's a prime example of this. Listen, my theories don't come out of nowhere, obviously, right? My mother's gorgeous when she was younger, beautiful. Slender, beautiful cheekbones, great face, just lovely. And then, of course, when I said she took to bed for weeks and didn't get out of bed, she was turning 40. I didn't know that at the time. Didn't make any sense to me at the time. She was turning 40. Right? I think she had me at 38. I was turning 12. She was turning 40. Boom, done. And for the rest of her life has been hell. Because she's solely focused on her looks. She's solely focused on her looks. And she could get men to date her. She couldn't get any man to marry her. Why? Because men aren't crazy. Men aren't crazy. See, again, we're programmed to look for a woman's capacity to survive her own infertility, because if she becomes neurotic, depressed, anxious, emptied out, and becomes a horror to live with, then we get exhausted, we die younger, there's fewer resources available for the grandkids. Because a woman who focuses solely on beauty is almost for sure going to end up resenting her grandchildren, right? Because the reason she has grandchildren is because she's lost her own fertility. They've gained their fertility, and she's going to end up resenting younger women. She's going to resent all of this stuff. Now, she's not oftentimes, and I don't know, this is a male-female thing I've talked about before. Men will often be honest about their mistakes and try and educate others to avoid their own disasters. Women will try and reinfect often, usually, will try and reinfect other women with their own disasters. Misery loves company. Like, for men, misery is instructive, and I'll help the world learn. For women, misery loves company. I'll infect other people. So the woman who's got no internal values or virtues, when she loses her fertility, she will then try to get younger women to repeat her mistakes in one way or another. This is an impactful speech for me. Good, good. I hope so. Women are not getting good advice from their elder females. They're getting absolutely terrible, the worst conceivable advice. Because for women as a whole, misery loves company. For men as a whole, misery breeds instruction. Do you think that's why they used to kill witches? Well, so for women, superstition leads to immorality. Again, I don't want to, this is 51-49%, right? So for men, superstition often leads to courage, strength, fortitude, building of beautiful things. They believe in a God, so they fight hard in battle. They protect their family. They build beautiful churches. So for men, a belief in the unreal will often lead to virtues and strength and protection and beauty. Often, not always, right? Now, for women, though, what does superstition or belief in the unknown, what does it lead to? It leads to manipulation. It leads to an abdication of free will. It leads to blaming everyone else for their problems. It leads to this mysticism. Like, I saw this. It was a dating show. It was just a real brief clip on social media. This woman says to a guy, "Oh, and what do you do for a living?" And he's like, "I'm an astrophysicist." And she's like, "Oh, cool. I'm a Scorpio." So for women, superstition leads to, astrology and witchery and spells and manipulation and abdication of immorality and no free will, and it's very infectious. So for men, again, there's lots of exceptions, but for men in general, a belief in the unseen, a belief in the unknown, a belief in the unreal leads to grandeur, protection, beauty, and strength of character. And for women, it often leads to dissolution of moral self-integrity and manipulation and complete loss of locus of control. And when you lose your locus of control, who's responsible for your life? You end up blaming everyone else, and it's really, really destructive. So I guess they were concerned that, that witches would spread this, particularly to the younger women, right? So what do witches do? The witches give women spells that make them more attractive. That's generally what witches do, right? So L'Oreal is a witch, right? Give you a spell that makes you more attractive, right? The makeup companies are witches. And does that help or harm women? It harms women. It harms women. Somebody says, oh, the Thai guy, you describe my exes in some ways, and of course I never speak to them anymore. They don't give a crap about me anymore. I'm guessing they don't even think of me. I wasted decades of my life with the wrong woman. Oh yeah, my God! You ever want to just die a little inside every day? Try to pair bond with someone who has no capacity to pair bond. Oh my God! Talk about reaching from the crib, toppling over into hell itself, right? And it comes from a mother who was emotionally unavailable that you had to put on a show to try and get to like you, right? Your mother should love you for existing, right? That's what mothers are supposed to do. But the mothers who don't have that bond, you just reach and reach and reach until you fall out of yourself, and it's just appalling. This is appalling. And then you can spend the rest of your life chasing after people who won't pair bond, who can't pair bond, but who will dangle the possibility of pair bonding in front of you till you just run off a cliff and you become bitter, anxious, depressed, and that's how. Like, you understand, irrationality wants to spread like a virus, and it does it through promises that are never followed through. Oh, your sister's that way? Oh, it's really tragic. Now, is your sister that way because she's pursuing a guy who can't pair bond, or she's dangling pretend pair bond in front of someone who's chasing after you, right? Oh, yeah, that's rough. I did topple into hell going for a beautiful woman who was a freak in bed, and she was totally unable to pair bond. 6 years of my life gone from her alone. Well, it wasn't gone. I mean, you got a doctorate in crazy avoidance. Oh, she can't pair bond? But she knows the value of pair bonding, right? That's the great tragedy. She knows the value of pair bonding, like a counterfeit guy who makes counterfeit currency knows the value. Knows the value of pair bonding. Like the counterfeit currency guy knows the value of currency, just won't create it for honest or for real, right? Is love bombing dangling connection? Love bombing is the social equivalent of excessive makeup, because love bombing is an overstimulation of pair bonding oxytocin, right? Like the endorphins, the happy hormones we get from pair bonding or from social bonding, we get happy through social bonding, right? I have like so many memories of like great nights at parties at my house as a kid, even and as an adult. Not so much at my house, but my mom had friends who had great parties, wonderful parties. You know, I try to have great parties at my place on a regular basis, and it's super fun. I mean, it's just great fun, lots of laughs, and all of that. Had a great party not too long ago where we played the game Cheat. It's a card game called Cheat, which is about lying, and it's hilarious. And then we played charades, which was, of course, a great blast, and had another party not too long ago. We broke out the karaoke machine and listened to 10 women sing Goodbye, Earl, which was a lot of fun. So, yeah, I mean, you try and have those social connections. So love bombing takes people who are starved of social endorphins, and it bombs them with love, hyperstimulates the endorphins of bonding, social bonding, and overwhelms their reason, right? In the same way, like, it's to overwhelm your reason, right? And so makeup and like, I talked to a guy who, the moment after he met this hot woman, she was sending him hypersexual texts, right? So that's an attempt to overcome his judgment with hyperstimulation, right? Like, you know, chocolate, candy, like the salty, sugary stuff, it's an attempt to overcome your self-control with hyperstimulation, and it works, right? In the same way that nicotine delivery through smoking is an attempt to overcome your fear of death with immediate hyperstimulation. So makeup is an attempt to overcome your judgment of the woman's inner hollowness through hyperstimulation of your hormones, of your sexual lust, right? Which is why lust is a great sin. Greed is a great sin. Greed is when you forego wise judgment in the pursuit of a value that will harm you, right? Addiction and run. So this is why greed is a sin, lust is a sin, and all of that. So yeah, love bombing is an attempt to overcome someone's reason and judgment by hyperstimulating their endorphins or the sort of pair bonding oxytocin, whatever it is, the pair bonding chemicals. Husband is trying to find a new job. He keeps ending up in positions surrounded by narcissist types. Any tips for salaried people on how to screen for a good position with minimal toxic people? Right. So you know that you're with a narcissist in a job interview if he's offering all of these benefits to you, you know, salary and all of that stuff. But if he doesn't ask you your long-term career aspirations, if he doesn't ask you what you like most about the job, if he doesn't ask you what you plan to do in the future, then it's a one-way street and you probably wouldn't want to end up working for someone like that. Because for the narcissist, it's like dangling the job is the only value he's bringing, right? And so generally, you'll end up with a very selfish person. The best bosses are the ones who care about your advancement and want to help you achieve your career goals. I mean, I had employees when I was a boss who wanted to get into sales and management, so I took them on sales trips, taught them everything I know, and right, you want them to be happy. You want them to achieve their goals as well, right? Business is about everyone's achieving their goals. And if you're interviewed by someone who never asks you about your goals, your future, your plans, they're just going to use and buy and burn, they call it in the software industry, buy people, burn them up, and so on, right? All right. Have we... So for men... Look, your instincts are second half of your life, second half of marriage, right? And for women, if you focus on just being physically attractive, then good men won't commit to you. Like, guaranteed. Good men won't commit to you if what you bring to the table is mostly physical attractiveness, because good men are sniffing out the second half of your life and they know that you're going to be a hollowed out, soul-sucking zombie from 40 to 90. And they just can't do that half decade of hell. I mean, why is it that a lot of married men die younger? Because they want to. I mean, that Al Bundy joke of praying for death, that's not, it doesn't come out of nowhere, right? That sort of married with children stuff. Right? I remember because I thought married with children was sort of like 30-something, some intellectual thing. And I remember the first time I tuned in, I'm like, this really is a portal to hell, isn't it? This really is a portal to hell. And the daughter, what do you always call her, pumpkin? Was that, I can't remember who that was. It wasn't Alicia Silverstone. Christina Applegate. Yeah, she got sick, right? So Christina Applegate's going through the same phase now. So she's gained weight. She's got really sick. She's got, what, MS or something like that, facing the loss of her looks. They've kind of had to prop her up on her new show because she can't stand on her own. So... married men do, I think they do live longer than single men because married men have wives who tell them to go to the doctor and so on. And but married men live less long than their wives. So Christina Applegate, right? So what does Christina Applegate, she's got a trashy family, she's not smart. So what does she do? She focuses on her looks. She's always perfectly turned out. She's got a great figure, great hair, great makeup. So Christina Applegate's character in Married with Children is a honey trap, right? Sniffing out second part of life is part of why my last relationship ended, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, would you enter into a business partnership with someone who would spend the last 40 years of that business partnership robbing you blind, taking everything out and putting nothing in? I don't think so. A woman has to bring something more than looks to the table because the looks are going to go. Looks are going to go. Looks are going to go. And sooner rather than later, because most women gain weight when pregnant and never quite lose it afterwards. Most women will never have the same figure after being pregnant than before, right? So you don't even have to wait till 40. You get married at 20 because the girl's super hot, and then you have a couple of kids in your 20s, and like, I'm sorry, she's just a potato with legs. Like, usually. It's not always, right? Some women really work hard and all of that kind of stuff. My wife did regain her figure, but she also had a great figure before, and she's only had one pregnancy, so it's not the same. But, yeah, look at me. I'm a pear. Right, so, and you know, what happens? Well, they go from hot to, you know, they got a kid on a hip. They, you know, they've been cleaning all day. They're sweaty, they don't wear makeup, they cut their hair short, and they dress in various flavors of tint. Is that the same as the fat grenade? No, that's not the same as the fat grenade. The fat grenade is the woman who is unconsciously angry at the man for choosing her for her looks, and therefore destroys her looks out of vengeance to him, for his shallowness, right? That's a psychological phenomenon of vengeance against his shallowness. Oh, you like me for my looks? Fine. Right, there's a great scene in an old movie called Parenthood with Steve Martin and Mary Steenburgen. and Diana Waste. It's a very funny movie where the woman who works out a lot is really angry at her husband, and she goes to her secret drawer of candy and just eats the candy, staring grimly and angrily at her husband, right? I really hate the hot mess mom trend where they brag about not showering for 4 days and don't even brush their hair. Yeah, it's rude. It's very rude. The hot mess mom is the same as the guy who just stops working after the kids are born, right? Because he's angry at his wife. Oh, you just want me? I'm just here for my resources. I'm just here to pay the bills. What the hell with you? I'm not paying the bills. I'm going to get fired. Well, this is all the result of a lack of self-knowledge and a lack of commitment to virtue at the beginning of things, right? And I say this as a battle-scarred, battle-hardened, barely walking survivor of the trench warfare of ultimate cleavage, right? You look at cleavage, it's just trench warfare, right? That's the real trench warfare that goes on. I mean, you understand, too, that a lot of social decay is women flexing, our selected women flexing. I'll touch on the topic if you want me to continue, let me know. So have you seen this trend where it's like, ugh, it's so gross when men just come up and talk to me and it's just like, can't they have any space? I'm just out here for lunch with my girlfriends. I don't want to be approached. I don't want men to just be circling around me, offering me the number. It's gross. It's intrusive. It's invasive. And I don't like it when they come up and talk. Look, this guy circling me at the gym and he just keeps wanting to come up and talk to me and it's really scary and I don't like it and it's bad, blah, blah, blah. Have you ever heard this nonsense? Yeah, you've seen that trend, right? You've seen that trend. So this is flexing from women, right? So let's say that there's a woman who's like 300 pounds and she complains about all the men hitting on her. Wouldn't we find that tragically funny? You were guilty of that in your youth? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So why did you do it? What was your, was it a humble brag? Was it a status flex when you were younger? I'm just so attractive that men just keep swarming around me. Like I'm like a halogen light and they're just like moths. Like I'm so hot. I'm so attractive that just beating men off, no pun intended, is just exhausting. Yeah, it was definitely a humble brag, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, booty shorts women with the tights up their crack and complains when men look at her when she records herself in the gym. Yeah, of course. Well, was there a woman who was complaining about a man looking at her in the gym, and she actually has an OnlyFans, right? I've seen a version where women complain about what a man does, then cuts it to a man writing a list 147 points long and then adds point 148 of what not to do. I don't follow that one, sorry. But, I mean, you've seen the one where the woman is complaining about a little bit of mess that the man left behind. And then the man takes her phone, takes her into the bathroom and shows like the massive amount of makeup crap she has all over the kitchen sinks. Thank you for the tip, my friend. I appreciate that. You deserve far more. One question. I'm a software engineer and I make a lot, even compared to colleagues, but I'm slowly hating what I do. I used to be very passionate about software. There was nothing better, but I feel like I'm burning out. Do you still like coding? I know you don't code anymore, but maybe you've gone through this phase. I'm not sure what to do other than this either. You are absolutely welcome to my response. And you may not like me after the answer. I'll send you a tip back if you want. But how blunt do you want me to be? Just not everyone, just how blunt do you want me to be? This is Vach. How blunt do you want me to be? 1 to 10. Just let me know. Do you want that? I'm happy to... go 200% honest? Right. Could you give me your age range, my friend? Are you 20s, 30s, 40s, or beyond? You're in your 30s. All right. Yeah. That's about right. That's about right. So, you're a talented man. You're a brilliant man. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. You listen to this show, I put you in the top 1%. Just so everyone knows, I automatically put everyone in the top 1% of ability who listens to the show. Because this is an elite show.
And would you say, tell me if this is right. Tell me if this is right. Since my deplatforming, has this become more of an elite show, yes or no? It is, right? I mean, this is more of an elite show, and that's why deplatforming is invisibility to the present, but massive visibility to the future. No, I don't think highly of you. This is just a fact. But I didn't know you were deplatformed for years. No, I get that. I'm just saying that my... because I'm deplatformed and there are fewer people watching, right? You know the old saying, right? Rock is playing 3 chords to 1,000 people. Jazz is playing 1,000 chords to 3 people, right? Yeah, filters people out. We can work at the highest level. So this is why I check. Okay, so you want me to be 200% blunt. All right, my friend Vach. Sorry, that's too close to Vosh. So my friend Vach. The reason why you're burned out is because you are hitting the tipping point, which is the middle of your career life. The tipping point in the middle of your career life, if you're a person of high ability, is to stop being defined by other people's requirements and stop being defined by your own ambitions. Because you get a list, you get a sheet. Here's what you got to build. Here's what you got to code. Blah, blah, blah. Do this, do that. And puppet strings, the clients, this, the boss, the that. Everybody wants you to do stuff, and you just, you know, okay, I'll do it. That's not defining yourself, and that's not having respect for your potential. I said, look, when I was younger, what did I want to be? I went to the National Theatre School of Canada for a couple of years. I wanted to be an actor. Now, do you think it would be a good use of my talents and abilities to be handed what is usually a woke script and mouth that to a camera run by other people? To put my talents in the service of other people's visions and language. Would that be a wise course of action for me? Would it? Yes or no? Would it be wise, given how many good words I have of my own? 985,000 subscribers on YouTube. Well, if they hadn't throttled me, it would have been easy, 2 mil. No, it would have been terrible. All of the words that I have would be lost because I'd be repeating the words of other people. Not only would it be a disrespect to my own talents and abilities, but I'd be using it for negative rather than for positive. I'd be using it for bad ends rather than good ends. Now, that's a moral thing for me. That's not necessarily the same in your career. But, my friend, are you going to follow orders your whole life? Tell me if I'm wrong. Being salaried is following orders. You don't generate your own work, your own purpose, your own goals, your own company, your own products. Isn't being salaried following orders? Tell me I'm wrong. I'm right. Of course, and there's nothing wrong with following orders. There's nothing wrong with following orders. Now, I'm going to guess, my friend, Vash, that you got into coding in your early to mid-teens. Am I right about that? You got into coding in your early to mid-teens. Right. So why do I say that? Because nobody who's sane can spend more than 20 years following orders. Right? And this follows the pattern of me, right? I studied philosophy for 20 years. I took orders in a sense. I followed philosophy for 20 years. And then I was like, I have to create my own stuff. I have to create my own stuff. Freddie Mercury started learning piano when he was 6. When he was in his mid-20s, he started writing great songs of his own. It's 20 years. You get 20 years of study and learning, and then you have to start doing your own thing or you will die on the vine. So you are being bribed into following orders. And again, I have no problem with following orders. If you want to be an elite athlete, you have to have a coach and you have to follow those orders. But you have to be your own person at some point. And you, again, I'm not trying to diss salary. I was salaried for time. I'm not trying to diss salary at all. But salary is paying you to not be yourself. Right? Being salaried is paying you to not be yourself. Because you wouldn't be doing what they're paying you for if they weren't paying you. So you're being paid to do the opposite or to do unrelated things to what you actually want to do. Tell me if I'm wrong. Again, if I'm wrong, I'm happy to take another run at it. But what are they paying you for? You wouldn't be doing what you're doing if they weren't paying you. No, you're exactly on point. Right. So you have been learning and absorbing and gathering knowledge, gathering an understanding of business, of programming, of product design, of marketing, of whatever it is that you're doing. You probably, let me ask you this. Are you a coder in a cubicle, or do they occasionally let you out into the big blue room to meet the flesh people? Do you ever go out, explain things? Do they get you on calls? Are you part of any kind of team lead or project management? Or are you just a coder? Oh, I'm completely free to go wherever. I know, but are you only speak to higher managers? Okay. All right. You don't talk to customers, is that right? Oh, I'm the one giving orders to other engineers. Okay, so you have leadership skills, project definition skills, motivation skills. People like to work for you. You're good at getting good work out of people. So what the fuck are you doing taking a salary at this point in your career? Come on, man. Come on, man. Why are you being a wage slave when you're a leader? I'm a programmer and I'm 40, says someone. I dealt with this emotion by starting an open source project. Great. Try and make that open source project something that pays the bills. Got distracted with women and picked the wrong one. Well, that's not unknown in the world, if that makes any sense. So why are you burned out? Not because you hate programming. I still love to program. I occasionally will dip into it. I tried a little bit of game programming a while ago. Blew my mind. Of course, I started with game programming that was manipulating ASCII text on a PET 2K computer. I tried to write the game Missile Command using ASCII. There's nothing challenging in what we do. Of course. Because you've spent 20, well, look, I mean, if you're 33, frankly, you've spent 33 years taking orders. I liked hard programming problems, right? So it's all, Vash, my friend. How many people benefit from your abilities? Right? Because everything you've talked about is you. I like this, I like that, I do this, I like, right? Billions of people benefit from what you do. Dude. I believe you every time you swipe your card. Okay. So you're benefiting billions of people. You have that capacity to provide value every time you trade a stock. Fantastic. Okay. I worked at a stock trading company. So you have the capacity to benefit billions of people and you get told what to do. Right. Do you have any entrepreneurs in your family or anybody you know who's an entrepreneur directly? Who you have access to, can talk, phone, whatever. Right? No, I'm the only one who did anything of that sort. Okay, no, I get that. I get that. I understand that. I have a passive income stream. Oh, no. Are you telling me that you have a passive income stream, you write such brilliant code that you benefit billions, and you're still salaried? Salaries for people without potential. Of course. Salaries for people without potential. I partially have to be employed. Yeah, I don't believe you. Sorry. Oh, is it for some work reason? Okay, so start a business. Like, of course you can stay if you start a business. You start a business, you just get a different visa. You get an investor visa. You get, like, you just start, like, you can do it. I don't know where you are, but I guarantee you, you can do it. Yeah, I'm thinking in that direction. Excellent. Are you single? Yes. What the fuck are you waiting for? Are you waiting till you get married and have kids to be an entrepreneur? That may not be overly wise. Like, you're single, so you've got all the time in the world. No kids. You're divorced, no kids. Okay, so you're single. You got all the time in the world. You got a passive income stream. You write code so brilliant it positively affects the lives of billions of people. You already know how to lead. You already know how to manage. What the fuck are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Christmas. Don't wait for Christmas. No, I'm curious. What are you waiting for? I mean, wouldn't you rather fail under your own steam than mediocrely succeed taking orders? Die on your knees. Sorry, die on your feet rather than live on your knees. Do you not have confidence that anyone other than your bosses will ever see that you provide value? I mean, your bosses are right. They pay you well. You've got a passive income stream. They know how valuable you are. Do you think that they're the only people who know how valuable you are? Do you think the customers and future employees will never know how valuable you are? I do. This is something recent. Well, okay, so you had parents who didn't encourage your value or understand your value, you know all that, right? But you understand that the structure is all designed to have you be afraid of being an entrepreneur, right? Because the existing business concerns, they don't want entrepreneurs, right? So entrepreneurs will generally overturn existing businesses because existing businesses are sclerotic and bureaucratic and have HR departments and, you know, ESG and all of that and DIE sort of stuff. So they don't want you to be out there doing your entrepreneurial thing. I mean, how much did the mainstream media like me and a guy, right? How much did it make? I mean, I remember doing this back on Twitter in the day, showing my daughter. Like, my tweets got way more engagement than, like, mainstream media outlets. Me and a guy. Working from home. No overhead. No office space. Very little travel budget. No diversity. No HR department. Like, just do whatever is best. Right, so the big organizations, right, dinosaurs don't like the mammals who will replace them. So the big organizations will constantly, they'll bribe you to stay, they'll talk down your ability. School does this too, because school just runs for the elite, right? So they won't tell you about entrepreneurship, and of course, how the hell are you going to learn about entrepreneurship from a tenured goddamn teacher? Blech, how are you going to learn about entrepreneurship from a university professor who can't be fired? Ugh, it's repulsive. So yeah, everybody and their dog is saying, be a wage slave, don't do your own thing, you're going to fail, it's going to be really bad. Go with what's certain, burn in the hand almost two of the bush. You have this, all this infrastructure that supports you. Just type, obey, and let us make all the money. You say, well, I've got a good income. Like, you know that your corporation is making many multiples of your income off selling your services, right? You know that, right? I mean, let me just look this up, because I used to know the number. Right, I used to know the number. Average profit from salaried employee. I wouldn't even put it in your particular region. Generally, it's at least double. I always went for higher than double. Well, you can. I'm not going to spend, but it's at least double, and usually it's many more times, multiple, right? I'm sure it's the social media companies, they're getting 5, 7, 10 or more times profit than what they're paying their employee. Somebody says, when I employ someone, I always make 50% at least over what I pay them, often double, if not more. Yeah. So you're getting paid $200,000 in a software environment, probably your products are being sold for at least $750,000, probably closer to $1 million, maybe even more, $1.2 million. I think it's well over $1 million per employee for programmers at social media companies. Funny enough, last few times I changed my job, I doubled my salary for sure. And the reason they're offering you double is because they're making 5 or 10 times more. You get scraps. Like, I know it feels like a lot of money. If you come from poverty, it feels like a lot of money. My God, man. What's stopping you? Is it social anxiety? Is it a fear of the steps or processes? Well, that's fine. Then just get a partner who handles that stuff for you. Right? Just, you don't have to do it all on your own. Just get someone who handles that stuff for you. So that you can focus on your core value provider. What stops me is that, yeah, you don't have to do that. Find someone who you can go into business with. I didn't go into business solo. I mean, I did here for Free Domain. I seem to not enjoy coding anymore, for sure. Because you're coding for others, not for yourself. How do you get past parents who didn't help you achieve your potential? Prove them wrong, man. Vengeance and pettiness. I talked about this in the show last night. Just prove them wrong. Isn't it great fun to prove people wrong?
they were the reason I achieved what I did.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people who tell you you can't succeed, that you're a loser, that you're a failure, well, fuck them, right? Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's part of the pleasure, isn't it? Part of the fun. Part of the fun. Part of the fun. You know, like I was just reading, Twitter has X, they have a new policy, right? Freedom of speech, not freedom of reach. Lawful, but awful. Just, oh, it rhymes, so it's Johnny Cochran proven, right? I can't believe Socrates didn't do more iambic pentameter to prove his syllogisms, right? But that's, you know, now it's, shadow banning is like official policy now at Twitter, right? Yeah, it's very sad. I mean, of course, but it's inevitable, right? I mean, so many people are making the money off government that free speech feels harmful to them, right? Does Twitter censor you now? How do I know? I'm not on Twitter. I mean, I have a browser account, but I don't. Everyone knows that because I do these social media reviews, right? I don't post on Twitter. Ew. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear, irrefutable. I don't know what that means, but... Yeah, so, I mean, you're not your own boss. Why the hell would you want to go through your life not being responsible for yourself? Right? I mean, I've been salaried. I've been entrepreneurial. Are you making fun of vapid rhyming rules? No, I get that. I just don't know what that one means. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. I don't know what that means. Does that mean you get drunk quicker? I don't know. My father is deathly afraid of risk. We lived in the same small ass apartment my whole childhood. I don't get the deathly afraid of risk. I mean, I hate to sound like some bullshit cone, but... or some fortune cookie, but the biggest risk is avoiding risk. I mean, that's the biggest risk, is avoiding risk. My father told me once, you're 18, you get the fuck out. And you did. Good for you. Good for you. Bad for your dad. Good for you. Yeah, this avoidance of risk stuff just drives me crazy. But then we have this sort of bubble-wrapped, hyper-feminine, child-proofed universe where nobody can fail, right? It's really sad. And because nobody can fail, society fails, right? Because we prop up everyone who fails, the economy dies. Right? Yeah, avoiding risk, God. I mean, I'll give you, would you like the simplest explanation of the greatest risk is in avoiding risk? Do you want the simplest one? Yeah. All right. On 1 to 10, how hard was it for you as a young man to go and ask a woman out? On 1 to 10, how scary was it, how nerve-wracking was it for you to go and ask a woman out? 10, exactly. 10, 9, 10. Yeah, it's 10 for everyone. I didn't bother. Well, so you avoided that risk, and then you ended up getting divorced, right? You must have asked someone out. Now, for women... Right. So for the female equivalent, it may be different now, but the female equivalent when I was younger was, how scary was it for you to be at a dance, to look good, to have a beautiful dress on or whatever it is that you're wearing, to be at a dance, to smile at a boy walking past and for him to just blow past like he didn't even see you? How unpleasant, how difficult was that for you as a woman to put yourself out there and for a boy that you like, find a track to just walk past you like you weren't even there? His eyes sliding past you like you're invisible. It was horrible, wasn't it? It was horrible. It was horrible. Painful. Helpless. I was used to it, but you don't get used to it. That's a cope, right? You don't get used to it. It's painful. Of course. It's like saying, well, I'm completely indifferent to my own genetic death. It's like, no, nobody's programmed that way who survived 3 billion years of evolution. Come on. It's painful. It's painful. Now, but not as painful as asking for tips. People not tipping. You can tip, of course, right? You can still tip. And of course, if you're listening to this later, you find it valuable. freedomain.com/donate. Please. I still think if you're a guy under 20, don't waste time on women. Focus on your career and passions. Oh, what a false dichotomy that is. What a false dichotomy that is. Well, women like older men. No, they like resources. Women don't like older men. They like resources. be honest, right? And you won't feel loved if the woman's just with you for your resources. So, you're at your lowest value in every way. No, you're not. Absolutely not. When you're a young man, like let's say you're 17 and you're asking a girl out on a date, you're at massively high value. Especially if you ask a woman out who's the same age. I mean, young, energetic, strong, can get by on little sleep, youthful vitality, rebounding quickly from injuries, greater fertility, greater sexual stamina. Come on. I mean, so you think that somehow we have evolved so that men are less productive when they have wives and children? Come on, man. This is evolution 101. You're a smart guy, which means I get to be slightly annoyed when you are not thinking. Sorry, that's just the reality, right? You know, high expectations, right? Like if a pro tennis player is holding the wrong end of the racket, it's okay to be a little impatient. You think that we've evolved as men to be less productive when we have wives and children? How would that be possible? How would that be possible, evolutionarily speaking? No, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay, my apologies. Let me scroll up and see. I still think if you're a guy under 20, don't waste time on women and focus on your career and passions. Yeah, that's what you said. I'm sorry, man. I can read. So that is what you said. It's an either or. That's why I said it's a false dichotomy. That is what you said. Again, I'm not misreading that. I mean, I'm happy to have interpretations of some things. But you did say, if you're a guy under 20, don't waste time on women and focus on your career and passions. So you're saying your career and passions will flourish if you're single. And I'm saying your career and passions flourish even more when you have a wife and kids. Because you have something to work for. You have a future to build for. You have something you're doing it for. Right? Like so last night I came out from doing my show and my wife and my daughter were watching a show and, you know, sitting on the couch. And I just said, man, that's beautiful. That's what I'm looking for. That's beautiful. I want them, you know, sitting there holding hands, watching the show, having a great time, laughing. And it's like, you know, that's what I'm working for. I mean, that's beautiful. It's lovely. So Vash says, I was trying to date in my early 20s. It was so hard. When I moved to blah, blah, I had a good thing going. I had zero issues. Tables flipped. I don't know what. But do you want to do a call and we can talk about this more? Somebody says, I'm 40. I was married at 22 and still am. I have 7 kids and I have a great career. I truly feel I earn more because I want to provide for them. Sure. Sure. I mean, statistically, right, we've talked about this before, right? So statistically, a man's income goes up significantly when he gets married, and it goes up even more significantly when he has children. Basically, it was like, I'm now a catch, and girls are going after me. Oh, dear. Oh, my friend Vosh. Are the girls going after you? It was the opposite in my 20s, right? So, are the girls going after you? Are they going after you? Have you just become so much harder over the past 15 years, from 18 to 33? Are you just so much more handsome, so much more charismatic, so much funnier, so much better, so much more gorgeous? Sexual market value of young men is very slow in their teens and early 20s. It's not true. That's not true. Have you ever seen girls scream over Justin Bieber? Are you kidding me? I mean, when I was a kid, all of the teen bands were massive. Like the Teen Tiger Beat had 16-year-old boys all over the cover of those magazines. the Beatles. I mean, yes, but those are exceptions. No, those are not exceptions. Those are not exceptions. It wasn't like they had, like the magazines aimed at teen girls didn't have 8 33-year-old programmers on them and then one Leif Garrett or Scott Baio or whoever was like the teen idol of the day. It was wall to wall, bald cheek, great hair, pretty boys. There's not the exceptions. I just don't get Bieber. Good looking guy. The girls I know who dated significantly older guys were not very stable. Yes. The daddy complex, right? The sugar daddy stuff and all of that, right? Now, look, there's nothing wrong. I mean, an age difference, I guess, is fine. But if you're 33 and she's 23, either she's 10 years more mature, which means she accelerated too fast and had an unstable childhood and had to grow up too quickly, or you're 10 years immature, or maybe she's plus 5, you're minus 5 or whatever, right? But it means that there's a gap, right? There's a problem. What significantly? 5 to 10? Again, it's so individual. But, I mean, come on. When Anna Nicole Smith married that guy in his 80s, everybody knew that was a money grab, right? I've been the girls the age of your daughter trying to date guys in their 30s or 40s. Oh, God. Sorry about that. Sorry about that. That's horrendous. But that's a woman, that's a woman desperately trying to find a provider so she can get out from under an abusive household, right? An average young man who doesn't have resources, experience, or status yet has nothing to offer a quality woman. An average young man who doesn't have resources, experiences, or status yet has nothing to offer a quality woman. So are you saying that older women are never attracted to younger men? Have you never heard of the cougar phenomenon? You say, oh, well, they aren't quality women. But we're talking about, are young men attractive? Of course they are. Of course they are. The only reason a woman would want me rather than 20-year-old Steph is because I have some more resources. That's it. Cougars also have low sexual market value. But the cougar phenomenon would not exist if the young men weren't willing to sleep with the older women. Right? So the cougar phenomenon exists because young men have sexual market value and older women have sexual market value and the two meet together and that's the phenomenon. So you can say they have low sexual market value, but it's high enough for the cougar phenomenon to exist. My point is just that young men are physically attractive. Of course they are. There's your gif for the show. Right, of course they are. An older man, let's say the man is 15 years older, right? The man is 15 years older, right? You got a 20 and a 35 or a, I don't know, 25 and a 40 or something like that. Okay, so when she's 60, he's 75. When she's 70, he's 85. He's going to die younger, and it's going to be less available for her towards the end of her life. Which means she has to lean way more on her kids than she should. He's going to age out way before she does, right? Again, you can do, I mean, obviously this is not a moral issue. There's no violation of the non-aggression principle or UPB to marry outside your particular age range. But for K-selected pairing, women are not only looking for sex, they're looking for a good father. But no, you guys are mixing things up here. Oh my God. See, when I say young men are attractive, you say, and physically attractive is R selected. And there's nothing wrong with physical attraction. We're not all K or all R, right? So when I'm saying young men are physically attractive, you're saying, but quality of character matters. And of course quality of character matters. Oh my God. But quality of, it's like saying, well, women are young, men are attracted to hot young women. It's like, yes, but men of real quality are looking for, okay, but it's a different standard. I'm saying young men are physically attractive. Young men are attractive. Say, ah, yes, but quality of character, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but that's a different standard. That's a different standard. I mean, it's not hugely complicated, right? What the female ideal is a young, wealthy man. Right? This is why women like actors, rock stars, Justin Bieber, whoever, right? Because they're young and wealthy.
in any, like, it, all other things being equal, all like income, wealth, whatever, all other things being equal, does a woman want a 20-year-old young man or a 40-year-old middle-aged man? All other things being equal, of course she's going to choose the younger man as a whole, right? Based on physical attractiveness, right? Now, of course, the woman is going to be attracted to your resources. I get that. Just as if you, so if you date a younger woman, what are the odds? Like, so you're 33. Let's say you date a 23-year-old woman. So the odds of you being attracted for mutual virtues are relatively low because she's going to be attracted to your resources and you're going to be attracted to her youth. Right? It doesn't mean that it's impossible for there to be a virtuous basis to the relationship. It could happen, but the odds of it go down. The more that there is an age disparity, the odds for a virtue-based relationship goes down. Because you'll never be absolutely sure that she didn't choose you just for your resources or largely for your resources, and she'll never be absolutely sure that you didn't largely choose her for her beauty and youth and sexiness. Whereas you date someone relatively your own age, that's less of an issue. Somebody says, an engineer in a generally poor country has similar resources to a king. Attracting based on that will get you stripped of your resources by leeches. Prostitutes should probably cost less in the long run. Well, don't do the prostitutes thing. That's gross and it's wretched and obviously fueling criminal elements. Because here's my concern. And the reason I'm saying this, my friend, here's my concern. My concern is that you're going to get bitter rebound, red pill rage dating situation, right? So what's going to happen is you're like, well, I was rejected by girls when I was younger. Now I'm older. I've got money. They're all flocking to me. And there's going to be bitter, vengeful dating. Yeah, I'm in the middle of it and it's not satisfying, right? So are you just playing the field? Are you just dating around? Are you just sleeping with women without committing? You're playing the field. Right. So you're breaking hearts, right? You're dangling resources and then leaving, right? The evil nerd who wants to kill the cheerleader who rejected him. That may be a little far. I mean, he's not a Bond villain. I'm always frank with my intentions. So? You understand that words don't overpower genetic hormonal preferences, right? Right. So why are you sleeping with a lot of women? Why are you sleeping? Is it like, why are you sleeping with a lot of women? You're not a kid. You're in your 30s. You're just using them for sex. You don't like them enough to commit. You don't respect them enough. You don't value their virtues. You don't care about their personalities. You don't like them. You just like their flesh casing. You like their vagina. You like where they aren't. I'm trying to find quality. No, you're not. Trying to find quality is dating without sleeping with them. But if the only thing they can offer is sex, then that's what I'll take. That's gross, man. Like, sorry, that's gross. Maybe you deserve to be salaried. Yeah, maybe. Right, maybe you deserve to be salaried. Maybe I should take back my prior advice. How do I know? What do you mean? How do you know what? It takes time to know. You don't have to sleep with women while you evaluate their personality, number one. And number two, it doesn't take that much time to know if a woman is high quality. It doesn't take that much time. Now, let me ask you this. Let's say a woman of quality, I'll fight for your soul, man. Let's say a woman of quality comes along and sees you dating trashy women you dislike and having sex with trashy women you dislike. A quality woman comes along. She's virtuous. She's kind. She's noble. She's moral. Virtuous woman comes along and sees you banging the trash, right? What's she going to... Remember, the woman is looking for quality too, brother. A woman comes along, asks you, what's your dating life? And you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm having sex with a lot of women I don't like. I'm having sex with a lot of women I don't like. What is a quality woman going to think of you? She's going to, oh boy, I can't wait to get married to this guy. That's husband material right there. a shallow sex addict who's completely disconnected his penis from any virtues or values. Okay, good. I guess I'm lost. I don't know what I'm doing. Beautiful. I mean, not beautiful that you're lost, but beautiful that you recognize it, right? Yeah, so the women, right? There are quality women in this chat. I love everyone in this chat, even you, my friend, even more now because you're honest. Quality women, what do you think of what this guy's saying? Would you want to date him? The quality women in this chat. Hell no. Right. He seems very bitter and resentful. You understand that, right? This is just vengeance. You're finding low quality women and you're having sex with them because you're bitter. Well, recent divorce, right. So let me ask you this. If you're a quality woman, yeah, vengeance. If you're a quality woman and a guy says, I just went through a really horrible divorce, do you want to sleep with him? Yes or no? All caps, no. You didn't divorce every woman on the planet. Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that. Yeah. So women who are willing to sleep with you right after you went through a terrible divorce are not quality women. There's not. I say this with sympathy. There may be very good reasons and all of that, but oh, so they 2 to 3 months after your bitter divorce, women are sleeping with you? Yeah. So they're hoping to bang you into giving them money. Like, I'm sorry, this is just the equation, right? Do you take them out on dates? Do you take them to restaurants? Do you take them to shows? Do you take them out anywhere? Do you date at all? Just what I want to do, they are welcome to join. There's a bitter acid moat around your heart, my friend, and I sympathize with that. I'm sure you've gone through some very tough stuff in life, and I sympathize with that. Do you pay, if they join you for dinner, do you pay for their dinner? Yes. Okay. Why? Unless they insist. No, I get it, but the default position is you pay. What's the average age of the woman you're dating? Are they 20s, mid-20s, early 20s, late teens? I don't know. What? What's the average age of the woman you're dating? 25? Okay. Now, the women that you're dating, would you say that they have successful lives, successful careers? Are they doing well in life? Yes. Okay. So then why would you need to pay for them? But it is mostly a show. What does that mean? Like they're in debt? No, they show like they have hobbies. Hobbies aren't successful. Hobbies are a side dish. I can tell you what these women don't have is they don't have fathers giving them good advice. They don't have fathers giving them good advice. I can guarantee you that. Because if they say, I met this guy, he's pretty wealthy, and he's just gone through a recent divorce, and, he does sleep with a lot of women, but I really want to date him. What's their father going to say when they're at their peak value at the age of 25 or whatever? What's their father going to say? What would their father say about dating you? Good idea or bad idea? It's a bad idea. And one of the reasons it's a bad idea is when you date an older man who has resources, then men your own age look broke. It's super stimulation. It's hyperstimulation. It's like that meme where a man before the shower looks like terrible, and then after the shower, he looks great. Whereas a woman before the shower looks great, and after the shower looks terrible, right? It's a bad idea because you're giving them the kind of resources that their contemporaries can't provide. The kind of lifestyle, the kind of dinners, the kind of outings, the kind of your place. You're programming them to want more than their contemporaries can provide. Right? In the same way you're programming yourself to want more variety than monogamy can provide. I thought I found the right girl, but I was clearly wrong. I can't identify value. Right. I sympathize with that. Call in at freedomain.com. We'll have a great conversation about it. But if you can't identify value, stop having sex with women. And because you're identifying negative value. You got divorced, which meant that you pursued somebody who is destructive. And I sympathize with that. That's back to childhood and all of that. But if you say, every woman I choose is bad, then I'm telling you, stop having sex with women. Because, you know, you're rolling the dice every time. You follow me, right? Every single time you have sex with a woman who you don't know very well, when you're sleeping around, you're rolling the dice, right? What's going to happen sooner or later? Sooner or later, you're going to roll that one. What happens then? What happens then? You get that one girl who just, well, you can get an STD. She can dig your condom out of the toilet and make yourself pregnant. You can get a rape accusation. You can get a stalker. And your life is toast. And then no woman will want to have anything to do with you. Right, so like no good woman will want to have anything to do with you. You're rolling the dice, my friend. I want to save you from that. And even if you somehow survive all of that, you're just contributing to lower birth rates, depopulation, and a disastrous old age. You're taken from the future to satisfy the sin of lust in the present. There is no such thing as consequence-free sex. There's no such thing. It's too deep. It's too powerful. It's too pair bonding. That's why sex is the glue that holds monogamy together for the sake of stable households for children. Absolutely for men. Absolutely for men. Sex is even more pair bonding for men because men can have second or third families. Every time you have sex with a woman you don't like or don't care for or have no future with whatsoever, you are harming your capacity to pair bond. You are harming the woman's capacity to pair bond, and society as a whole will pay the consequences. You can't use people you dislike for your own selfish sensual pleasure and have a great deal of respect for yourself afterwards. You say, no, but I tell them the truth. No, you don't. You absolutely don't. You don't tell them the truth. You are absolutely lying to them. I guarantee it. Because if you say to any woman, I really dislike you as a person, but I want to use you for sex. I really, like, you kind of repulse me as a person, but I want to use you for sex. You never say that. I guarantee you say, well, I'm not looking for a commitment. I don't want to settle down. But you don't tell them the actual truth, which is you don't like them. You don't like them, but you want to use them for sex. So you don't tell them. You don't tell them the truth. And God help you if you tell a woman you don't like her, but you just want to use her for sex, and she's like, sounds good to me. Yeah. On any point, women can challenge your manhood. At any point, women can challenge your manhood. But man sex is monogamy. Boy sex is sleeping around. And if you do nothing, they will think something is wrong with you. Oh, so if you date a woman and you don't try and have sex with her, she'll think there's something wrong with you? I'm not chasing them for sex. They get to the point, I don't refuse them. I don't know. So the women chase you for sex. Yeah, so the women are trying to get access to your resources through sleeping with you. That's called prostitution, in a way. Right, so the women are trying to get access to your money by sleeping with you. Let's be frank. Because if you were poor, they wouldn't sleep with you. So they're trying, and you show them your resources by paying for their meals. Right? So they're trying to bang you into revealing your ballsack ATM pin number. So what do I do to maximize chances of meeting a quality woman?
in this damn generation? Well, the first thing you do is stop hanging out with trashy women. Right? I mean, you're like a guy sitting on the couch eating Cheetos saying, well, how on earth do I get healthy? Well, the first thing you do is get off the couch and stop eating Cheetos. And see, in this damn generation, hostility. Go to church, look for a woman there. Certainly in a good church, you will find a woman who's closer to your values than the average atheist or agnostic. But if you hang around with trash and then say, well, I can't find quality, right? You know, I keep picking up women during visiting hours at the mental asylum. There just aren't any sane women out there. Well, it could be where you're looking. Well, I never thought of them as trash. Well, if you're both lying to each other, that's kind of trashy. So if they say to you, listen, I don't particularly like you as a person, but you spend money on me, so I'll have sex with you, that's pretty trashy, right? And if you say, if you are in the relationship and you don't really like them, but you want access to sex, that's pretty trashy too, right? And you don't have a standard by which to live your life, which is why you feel lost. You don't have a standard by which to live your life. And so if you don't have a value or a standard or philosophy by which to live your life, how do you live your life? You live your life according to hormones, according to lust, according to pleasure in the moment, according to tongue or balls or whatever it is, right? So if you don't have a philosophy for living, you follow your impulses. If you don't have the angels of philosophy, you have the ball sack of the mammal. And listen, what you said that your father rejected you, literally said, you're not my son anymore. Well, you should listen to the show from last night about people who are harsh with you, and in fact, they're trying to save you. And I have massive sympathy for that, massive sympathy for that. I'm trying to give you a bit of a, hopefully slightly shocking wake-up call. Steph, in regards to the age gap, I remember you saying previously that if you were dating today, you'd be dating 20 years younger. I don't remember saying that. I could have said that, and I don't know the context, so. I don't recall that. But I think I might have said that if I was dating now and I wanted a family, then I'd have to date 20 years younger because they'd have to have a woman in her mid-30s would be the oldest I could date if I wanted a family. I clearly don't value money because I let it go all the time. Right. Well, listen, I think you should call in. I mean, obviously it's a free service. Unlike your dates, you don't have to pay me. Ooh, sorry, that was a little cold. But yeah, call in at freedomain.com. I'm certainly happy to chat. And we can maybe get to the bottom of this. Money, in fact, ruins so many relationships. Sure, well, money without values is self-destructive. Money without virtue, money without philosophy is self-destructive, which is why so many people who win the lottery destroy their entire lives. Any last tips, my friends? I think we've covered some excellent, deep, meaningful, and powerful ground today. Last tips for the month of August 2023. freedomain.com/donate. I'm not sure how you do call-ins. Just email me. Email me your Skype address. Callin@freedomain.com. Callin@freedomain.com. C-A-L-L-I-N. Any last tips? I think we did some fantastic stuff. Saved some lives. Saved some marriages. Pulled people out of the depths. Hopefully. I'm sure we can. And it's your 5-year wedding anniversary. Congratulations. Congratulations. It only gets better from here. I love getting married. I'm now married over 20 years. I love being married even more now than when I started. It gets better and better. Just gets better and better. Oh, you found your husband with my advice? Beautiful, beautiful. Well, give him some tongue for me. Just kidding. Lick his ear. Whatever. Take some of his popsicle. Oh, that's another analogy. You know what I'm saying. I should stop here. The innuendos are crashing in faster than the opening tracks of a Queen album. All right. Oh, yeah, we're back to music. Another tip. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I'll just wait till everyone's finished typing before I close off. Just while we're here, do you have any tips for, like, I think the only bad habit I have eating-wise is I'm a little bit of a night snacker. Anybody have any good tips on, I don't want to drink too much because then I'm peeing all the night. Like, any tips for, like,
Yes, you may have ruined everything in marriage. Call me. Hey, call me, man. I love the call-ins. It's how I get my walks in. High-protein snack. Do not chew ice. It's bad for your teeth. Yeah, no, I try and avoid that. High-protein snack. Yeah? You're a night snaker as well. night snaker. Night snaker. Make friends with the hunger. It's tough. I struggle with hunger at night, too. The problem is, if I wake up hungry, I can't get back to sleep. Eat a high-protein breakfast made me stop late-night snacking. Ah, like a omelette or something like that. Omelette with cheese, high-protein breakfast. Okay, yeah, because a bit of night snacking probably ain't doing me a huge amount of good, and I'm kind of stalled on my weight loss now in the low 190s. Have a Baby Bell cheese. Oh, Baby Bell, is those little ovals, or little flat ovals? Check out Dr. Eric Berg YouTube channel. I hate what his brother Ice did to the Titanic. It was just brutal. But I was doing some intermittent fasting, made me hungrier at night. Yeah, I haven't eaten yet today. It's like 1:30 in the afternoon. I'll probably get something to eat. I don't eat really in the morning. I don't eat usually till mid-afternoon. And then I eat a little bit. I'll have something for dinner, and then I'll snack at night. And that's my eating. It's not, I don't know if it's ideal or not. But yeah, basically from about 10 o'clock at night until 3 o'clock the next afternoon, I don't. How late do I eat dinner? It kind of varies on what we're doing. It kind of varies. But I usually eat dinner around 6 or 7. We do eat family meals together, yeah. So 6 or 7, we'll usually sit down and eat together. Try a long-term fast to reset your idea of hunger. A few days can be very helpful. I don't know about that. A few days of not eating? That's going to be tough on sleep, man. I have a tough time with no sleep. Or with little sleep. You know what? I can give it a try. I guess I did it 2 days for my colonoscopy. Have you asked yourself if you should lose more weight? Yeah, I could use. See, here's the thing. As you get older and your joints get more delicate, I want to be able to play pickleball and throw myself at the ball. But if I'm heavier, a little heavier, if I lose another 10 or 15 pounds, then I can ask yourself who benefits from you eating at night. No, it's a fair question. I mean, obviously, I used to snack sometimes out of stress because of my family. The stuff would happen at night. Bad stuff would happen at night when my mom was home. So probably has something to that. Oh, this is one of Eric Berg's videos on snacking. I appreciate that. I will watch that right after the show while I eat. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, so much. I really, really appreciate your time. Freedomain.com/donate to check out how you can support the show, which I would really appreciate. Also, freedomain.com/books. Please check out my books. If you're packing on muscle, you need to eat. Yes, I am packing on some more muscle because I'm working out while I write. And it's bulking me up a smidge. So thanks, everyone. Lots of love. Really, to the person who called in about, who talked about sleeping around and stuff, I say it out of love and respect. You're a brilliant guy and a very productive guy. I have massive sympathy for the pain you're going through. I really do. So I hope my words weren't overly shocking. I hope I don't alienate you from a conversation. Call in at freedomain.com. Love to chat. And I'm sure we can do some great stuff. So I just really, really wanted to point that out. If there's any kind of a harshness or firmness, it is out of great affection to your potential. I don't really get irritated at people who don't have potential, so I hope that helps. So lots of love from up here. Take care, my friends. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.